the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! October 26th. What is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course! Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars! This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean... That says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive. Cause you can't stop us out and you can't make us run, cause we're them old boys raised on shotgun. We say grace, we say ma'am, if you ain't into that,
we're from North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
goddamn is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Reality. A local inventor has discovered a way, hear this, to use water to run your car.
It's a major breakthrough that will no doubt make motorists happy. And as Ralph Robinson explains, the Pentagon is also showing lots of interest in this project.
Water has always been considered a precious commodity, but Stan Meyer's invention may make it even more valuable. He has developed what's called a water fuel cell. It has taken the place of his old gas tank. The water fuel cell breaks down water molecules into oxygen and hydrogen. The hydrogen is used to run his dune buggy.
I don't care if you use rainwater, well water, city water, ocean water. If you don't have any fresh water, go ahead and use snow.
If you don't have any snow available to you, they use salt water because there's no adverse effect to the fuel cell.
Myers started working on this project 4 years ago. He's not a scientist. He isn't even a chemist. In fact, he never graduated from college. Myers was determined, he says, to design something to protect this country from oil embargoes.
And we have calculated that if we take the dune buggy from Los Angeles to New York, we would roughly use 22 gallons of water.
The Pentagon flew a Lieutenant Colonel in last week to look at Myers' invention. There's talk of possibly using it in the Star Wars defense program and to run army tanks. Myers is currently perfecting a water fuel cell for cars. It will cost about $1,500. He says it won't need any maintenance and you won't have to replace it.
It'll be at least 2 years before the fuel system goes into mass production. The day it happens will be one the fuel industry hates, but it'll put a smile on the face of those who've had to say at one time or another, fill her up. I'm Ralph Robinson.
As you can see, many patents have already been received, and many more are forthcoming. To date, over 42 patents have been applied for.
Hydrogen fuel cells run vehicles and other machines by directly converting the chemical energy in hydrogen gas into electrical power. Hydrogen is an abundant fuel source, and it can be extracted from water, enabling almost any country to produce it domestically. Hydrogen fuel cell engines can power vehicles or run backup generators for large computer operations. They produce electrical power without any emissions. At the heart of the engine is a stack of super-thin hydrogen fuel cells. The engine's blower pushes in air. The fuel tank then feeds in the hydrogen gas. Hydrogen and oxygen react to create electricity. Each fuel cell is made of five parts. On each end, there's a channeled plate, made primarily of carbon, a material which conducts electricity. Hydrogen enters the cell through the first plate, which channels it through the next component, chemically treated paper, which conducts both gas and electricity. Then the hydrogen enters this membrane, where it splits into protons and electrons. The protons react with the oxygen, producing water. The water passes through another paper to the cell's outer plate, where a pump draws it away. Meanwhile, the electrons travel to the end of the stack of fuel cells to electrical wires. After assembling the stack, technicians compress the fuel cells in a hydraulic press. Compression helps the current flow smoothly from cell to cell. It also presses the rubber gasket around each plate to the adjacent one, sealing the stack so the hydrogen can't leak out. The technicians run a quality control test with nitrogen gas to verify the seal. Before releasing the press, they install high-strength steel rods to bind the compressed cells together. For a stack this size, the rods apply 3 tons of pressure. With the stack now off the press, they hook up an electrical circuit board which monitors the voltage of each fuel cell. After securing the connectors to the stack with an adhesive strip, it's just a matter of connecting one to each fuel cell. They secure that connection with a special type of epoxy, which contains silver to conduct electricity. They then mount the circuit board and a plastic cover to protect it. The fuel cell stack is now fully assembled and moves on for testing. The technician mounts it on a test station and connects a hydrogen line, an air line, and a water line for cooling. The testing machine runs a 3-hour automated performance test. Technicians mount the stack onto the engine's structural frame and then install the hydrogen recirculation pump. A water pump is then fitted, which cools the fuel cell by pumping in cool water. They then install the components which supply the hydrogen, stored at high pressure in the fuel tank. And it's that pressure that pushes the gas through the stainless steel fuel lines to the cell. Then the fan that blows outside air into the fuel cell to react with the hydrogen. This filter removes dust and other contaminants drawn in from that fan into the fuel. In the meantime, technicians have assembled the computer that controls the whole engine. They connect the wires from the fan, the pumps and the other engine components to the computer. They connect the fuel cell output wiring which are the wires that carry the current the fuel cell creates and sends it to whatever vehicle or device the engine is powering. A tiny portion of the cell's output powers the pumps and other engine components. Now fully assembled, the engine undergoes extensive performance and safety testing. Once it passes every test, technicians perform a final visual inspection and then install the sheet metal cover. The hydrogen fuel cell engine is now ready to be delivered to the customer, and installed in the machine it'll be powering. Whether running a vehicle like this forklift or powering computer servers, the only byproduct is waste heat and water, which is why hydrogen power is clean energy. It's that simple. More power to you, I say.
Which of five nominees did we choose for our Best Car to Buy 2015 award? And what costs more per mile in a Tesla electric car? It's electric fuel or the tires that the car rides on? This is our video look back at the week in reverse, right here at Green Car Reports, for the week ending on Friday, November 14th, 2014. On Friday, we updated our story on a controversial Lexus CT hybrid ad that mocked a BMW i3 electric car. It first appeared on the humor site Funny or Die. We noted that the video had been pulled off the site, and then a copy had been deleted from YouTube. As often happens, though, another copy reappeared. Worse, it turned out that the ad agency had actually used a range-extended BMW i3 Rex model. Then they tried to Photoshop out its gas door. That made the ad's range comparisons of the two cars, well, let's just say a little bit questionable. Thursday, our author David Noland contributed another in his series of articles on life with his Tesla Model S electric car. In this latest episode, he gleefully calculated that he actually spent more per mile on his tires, 4.3 cents, than he did on electricity to power the car, at about 3.6 cents a mile. Wednesday, we published our drive report on the newest electric car on the market, the 2015 Kia Soul EV Tall Wagon. Its 93-mile range is about 10 miles higher than other cars in its segment. Tuesday, we were talking about Tesla once more, looking at the changes to its Model S lineup that killed off three versions, two paint colors, and a few options as well. We opened the week on Monday by revealing our Green Car Report's Best Car to Buy 2015 award winner. It's the 2015 Volkswagen Golf Range. As we noted in our post nominating the 2015 Golf, it includes the new, more efficient Golf TDI diesel and the e-Golf battery electric model, rated at 83 miles of range and 115 mpge. Sunday, before announcing the award, we looked at the car our readers thought should be our best car to buy. We have to hand it to our readers. You guys picked the same car we did. Great minds think alike. Or, well, or something. Finally, you may remember that last month, we published a piece called 10 Questions on Hydrogen Fuel Cell Cars to ask Toyota, Honda, and Hyundai. They're the three makers who are putting fuel cell cars on the roads of Southern California over the next 2 years. After we contacted them, all three car makers agreed to respond in writing, and we got some additional answers from the California Fuel Cell Partnership, too. Now, we've published the first two parts of a series that summarizes and evaluates their answers. Part 1 compared hydrogen vehicles to battery electric cars, and Part 2 covers fueling infrastructure. We'll say this. The automakers weren't shy about saying what they think, and one of them aggressively highlights the drawbacks of electric cars.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science. I got Thomas on here, and I got Raymond on here. today. Have you heard those podcasts? You're listening to Shazizz Radio at www.shazizzradio.com. You heard those short podcasts. What's that air blowing in the background? We got an industrial strength AC going. Oh, it must be on my side. I don't know. Somebody's got like a wild air going. Anyway.
That's about to hear.
We'll just have to deal with it, I guess. Let me try to turn that down just a hair.
Hold up just a second. Hold up. I'm out of here.
All right. Well, anyway, if you were listening to the beginning of the show, I played three short podcasts, one starting off with a commercial back in the 70s where Stan Myers was riding around in a dune buggy with car running on water. And, of course, he got the... There we go. That sounds good, whatever you did. Of course, he got the Pentagon's interest in the episode, and they wanted to talk to him about his technology. And so, you know, history shows that whenever he refused to do to let him have it because he had patents out all over this, he wanted to put it out there on the market. Then wasn't much longer Stan Myers wasn't around anymore. Yeah, that's a put your tinfoil hat conspiracy dick thing on the way, but that's the way the story was told. And we all know how things work. So with that said, the technology has been available for quite some time. I mean, he was literally driving around in a dune buggy with running on water. But it doesn't stop there, because the technology, to this very day, they're still working on really incredible high-tech... Did I lose you guys?
No, not me.
Oh, okay. Somebody muted up. Anyway, they're working on really high-tech fuel cells. And, of course, wasn't about maybe a year or so back, they come out with an announcement that by the year 2016, the U.S. Navy would be running their ships on hydrogen instead of having to use fuel, which, me being an ex-Navy man from way back, when you got to fuel undersea, you know, that's a one heck of a task to do so. But just imagine if you're driving around in a Navy ship and you're running off the water that you're driving on. So you don't even have to carry fuel, which opens up some more space there. Instead of having to have huge fuel tanks to run this doggone thing, you're just picking up your fuel as you go. Anyway, most folks probably don't understand that there's a couple different ways to actually use hydrogen power. One of which is the most well known, which is the electrolysis process, where you take the DC current and you run it through two separate plates, a positive and a negative, and you actually separate the water molecules, the hydrogen and oxygen, from each other. And I can't remember. Hydrogen, I think, goes up the negative, and oxygen goes up the positive side plate. And you can separate them into two separate containers. And then you can take and recombine them and burn them as fuel. Well, the other process, the fuel cells that they make, that you can literally take and generate electricity by separating the hydrogen and oxygen. If you have pressurized hydrogen in a tank and you're running it in through, when it interacts with water, it will actually, while the recombining is happening, it will actually produce electricity. So they built some pretty impressive fuel cells that can actually generate electricity to run things like forklifts and vehicles and stuff. There are some really nice looking cars out there, and actually diesel trucks. When I say diesel trucks, it's just because it's a big truck, you know, it's a tractor trailer kind of thing. It's not actually running on diesel, it's actually running on hydrogen. And that's pretty impressive that you can get that much power to run something that big that could actually pull you know, a 40-foot trailer or whatever, you know, full of a load. So that's pretty impressive technology. But there, like I said, there's two separate ways that you can use the hydrogen. One is to basically use electrolysis, and the other is to break the water apart and then recombine it. And that process of recombining it actually produces electricity in the cell. And so you know, the technology, it was kind of encouraging to find that it's not lost technology. It's still out there. They're still actually working on it. Now, there's a lot of controversy going on, and there's a lot of people that are trying to, you know, slow down that process. They don't want it to, you know, hit the market because of, you know, the fuel industry and such. But either way, it's out there, it's being tested, it's being worked on, and so eventually, sometime, you know, maybe not in our lifetime, the way that everybody's dragging their feet, but at some point, you're going to see hydrogen cell cars on the market. They already sell hydrogen cell cars, but the cars that are out there, even the hydrogen hybrids, they're so expensive that your average Joe, you know, it's not plausible for your average Joe to be able to afford one. You know, like Tesla electric cars, they make some really beautiful, sporty looking cars, and all electric. They actually have a hydrogen version that is actually generating the electricity for the electric car. And so, you know, with that said, whether it's a hybrid, a hydrogen, oxygen, with you know, a little bit of fuel, whatever, it's just an all and all out hydrogen cell or a hydrogen electric cell, it's out there. They're actually doing this work. And so at some point in time, we'll catch up and we'll actually see these on the market. Now I'm looking forward to the day that they get them out there where it's at the right price, where everybody can afford them, because the moment that occurs, and you actually have a car that has an engine in it that will run on water, this whole alternative energy thing, it's a done deal. Because if I can go down to the salvage yard and buy an old hydrogen engine from somebody who cracked up their car, and I can get it for a reasonable price, I'm hooking that thing up to a generator head, and I'm running my house on water, period. Because it's already done, proven technology. It's not like it can't be done. There's actually companies out there that literally sell hydrogen generating systems that basically is a regular generator, except it runs on water. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. But until it actually makes it on the mainstream market where your average Joe actually has access to it, I still want to talk about this subject, because there's other things out there that I believe could actually, you know, be little pieces of the puzzle that could make these yet even better when they do come on the market. Like Raymond and I were talking about Peltier elements earlier. And there's a process by which you can actually take magnets on a disc, and you can spin them past copper tubing, and you can get that copper tubing so hot because of the eddy currents and Lenz's law that's taking effect as it, that drag is creating friction on that copper, that it actually heats that water up that you're circulating through the copper tubing. And I've actually seen some videos out there where people were running these at, you know, somewhere around 15,000 and higher RPMs, you know, just with regular standard motors. And they were generating some really amazing, really impressive heat off of these things. Well, I got to thinking about the Peltier elements and how they function with the two temperature differences, where you got a cold side and you put heat to the other side, and that Peltier element will actually generate heat. So taking that piece of the puzzle and combining it with the magnet heater that I just explained, imagine taking a Peltier element and a copper plate and sticking the copper plate on the side of one side of the Peltier element, and then the heat sink on the opposite side of the Peltier element, and then spinning magnets across there. Now, if you use really thin copper plating, then it's not going to create as much drag, but it'll still be able to heat up faster. And so all you need for a Peltier element to be able to generate electricity is a temperature difference. If it's cooler on one side than it is on the other side, then it will actually generate electricity. So that's one of the little experiments that I plan on doing as soon as I get hold of some Peltier elements and materials to do it. And I'm actually going to use some like RC motors to spin neodymium magnets from hard drives, computer hard drives, past this copper plating and see actually how much electricity that I can generate and how much I actually have to put in order to actually get what I'm getting out.
To this?
Yeah.
I want to inject something here. You said put copper on one side and use magnets to go across it to use your lens on and so forth to create heat, but you're going to put you're going to put something on the other side. Heat sink.
You know, like you see on processors, computer processors.
The idea you have came from the fact that somebody actually used magnets on the copper tubing to heat water.
Yeah.
So wait a minute, we all know that you cannot destroy energy. So consequently, you're creating energy by creating this heat to heat water. Now, yeah. What you want to do is put a Peltier device here and a heat sink on the other side so that it makes electricity. But now, why not put water on the heat sink? So now you're making electricity and heating water with the same identical energy.
Well, that's brilliant, because you could actually build a really small water jacket on the other side, which would actually take the heat away from that Peltier element and still give your temperature difference, so you'd actually, at the very least, be able to warm the water on the other side.
That's what I've been trying to say for the past year. Hey, look, you can't destroy the energy. So what happened to the energy you used yesterday?
Well, see,
they go off wild.
They also said in the process, if you listen to that podcast, they also said that one of the only byproducts of using these energy cells, that they're the hydrogen cells, which is working like a battery almost, is that they generate waste heat and water. When you basically, it recombines the hydrogen and oxygen and you get water back out of it. So your fuel that it took to actually generate the electricity comes back in the form of water, so you ain't lost none. You could recirculate the same water over and over, but you could also use that heat from the device in order to, like, say, heat your house or, you know, your car or whatever. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Because you're not losing nothing.
When you started off talking about the United States Navy trying to use ocean water, which is salt water, which conducts electricity, which is perfect for using electricity to split water into hydrogen and oxygen, then burn it as a fuel. But in burning it as a fuel, what are you going to get? You're going to get distilled water.
Yes.
You're going to get fresh water. So now you're powering your ship and making fresh water, or you have that ship set in port making electricity and creating fresh water, and now all of a sudden you have no more drought in California.
There you go. See, and that's another thing about the whole deal, this whole perceived drought in California. And I told some people about desalination plants, and they're like, "Oh, well, that's just too expensive, man." Well, you got a drought going on, and you got people that need water. Now, if you don't want to build the traditional style desalination plant, then why don't build a hydrogen cell and actually have that hydrogen cell clean your water up for you?
Exactly. It's too big, too expensive. Give me a break, man. What did the Hoover Dam cost?
You know, there's another byproduct that would come out of that process that is actually healthy. You can get sea salt out of the water and be able to, you know, make a little bit of money off on the side selling people sea salt.
Yes, but that would be only pennies compared to what the actual advantage of it. You're using the HHO to burn to make electricity, but you're getting fresh water as a byproduct.
Yeah, and you're getting salt.
Everyone talks about the energy crisis. The energy crisis is nothing. It is absolutely nothing compared to the water crisis, and nobody's addressing the water crisis. Come on.
The way that I see it, man, there never was an energy crisis, and the fact that, we're not using these technologies. Stephen Gibbons asked why the world ain't running on these cars right now. Well, it's essentially because everybody's out there fighting over, people want to make their money. If you're in the oil industry, the last thing you want is somebody telling everybody you can run your car on water. But, when the United States Navy or the Pentagon gets interested in a fuel that you know, everybody says isn't possible, and then they come out with a deal and say that they're actually going to be running their Navy vessels on the doggone thing by a certain period of time, then somebody need to wake up and say, hey, you know, maybe that whole deal about Stan Myers was true. Maybe he really was driving it. They showed it on the news back in the day, man. The guy's driving around in a dune buggy, and he didn't hide anything for anybody except for the internals of how he actually, you know, the what he had patented on, how he was actually getting, instead of doing electrolysis, he was using radio waves in order to separate the hydrogen oxygen. Essentially, microwave technology. All right, you heat water up in your microwave. That is the beginning process of actually separating the water from the hydrogen from the oxygen. You know, at a certain point, if you boil water hot enough into steam, and then you keep heating that water, eventually it's going to break down. And at some point, when it's finally so vaporized that it's beyond, you know, no longer combined as water, you got two separate molecules out there that if you ignite a spark, bam, you got an explosion. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Remember, before we went on the air, I told you about the experiment I did 5-6 years ago.
Yeah?
Two pieces of stainless steel, put 1/8 inch apart, and I put magnets on the outside of both.
Well,
firing up correctly, it will increase production of HHO by over 50%.
Yeah, and there's a couple videos out there where they show that by putting magnets in there, it increased the output production.
Yes, it does. And the thing is, I mean, the miners don't even have to run. They just be there.
Well, you talked about a long time ago about how far that water will actually expand in whenever it goes from the water state to steam. All right, just that expansion enough would build up enough pressure to push a piston down in an internal combustion engine.
Are you kidding? Gasoline and oxygen expands 450 times its size when it ignites under pressure. Water expands 1,600 times its size. That is 3.7 times more power than gasoline.
Yep.
Water is 3.7 times more powerful than gasoline.
So that's why the farmers were injecting small amounts of water into their cylinders after they got their tractors up to operating temperature, because not only did it save them on fuel, but it gave them a boost in horsepower as well.
I did the same thing. 1969 Ford Ranger pickup truck, back when the Ford Ranger was at full size. It was a 302 motor. I plumbed it out to where I used distilled water, and I used my windshield washer pump and motor to spray through one of my wife's perfume nozzles a mist. I could be running 45 miles an hour, just shove the gas pedal to the floor, and hit the windshield washer motor and squall rubber for 100 yards.
Well, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if anybody ever pays attention to how much better your car actually runs in a foggy weather condition, but that's because in the even through the air filter, that fine mist that's out there that is water essentially getting sucked into the intake and combining inside the cylinders there, and once it hits that heat inside there, yeah, it's going to double up the pressure of whatever that fuel's already done. And
exactly.
So your car is going to run better.
A lot better. The thicker the fog, the better your engine will run.
Yep. Well, see, now here we go. We've been talking about free energy forever and a day. Now, once again, we got to split hairs, because when you talk about free energy, everybody's like, well, you know, free energy, it's not really free because somebody got to do this to get that, and it's real expensive to buy the parts or whatever. But by God, if you actually had a motor, a hydrogen cell generator, or the hydrogen burning motor, you know, there's two separate things we're talking about here. One's an internal combustion style where you're separating it and burning it on demand. The other, you have some pressurized hydrogen forcing pressure into water. When that water molecule and that hydrogen interact, it actually releases electricity that in turn you can run an electric motor with. And these things are pretty doggone impressive. They're running forklifts. Do you realize how much torque a forklift needs to lift a pallet off the ground?
Really?
And move the forklift?
Really? Alright.
So,
yeah.
Now, tell me, once you already got the doggone device, and all you have to come up with for fuel is water, and you live next to the creek, what's going on here? You see what I mean?
Like,
I don't gotta go out and buy a fuel. I just walk down the creek and get a bucket.
You know, I haven't done it yet, but I've done experiments other ways to prove that my point, but it is possible to actually produce electricity through the process of electrolysis of splitting water into HHO.
Yep.
Burning the HHO, you can use the HHO to produce electricity and not even burn it.
Yeah, and there's another deal up inside that deal you just talked about, man. What people think whenever they think about hydrogen production, let's just go start off with the electrolysis process. Now that's a pain in the neck because you can draw a lot of amps if you don't have the cell, you know, built really good. You know, you can draw a lot of amps. And so, you know, oh, well, it takes more energy to get the hydrogen out. But in reality, all you need is a DC current. It don't matter how small that DC current is. It doesn't matter how weak that DC current is. Now, keep in mind, your hydrogen production on a really, you can make hydrogen with a 9-volt battery. Man, you can make hydrogen with a pin light battery, a 1.5-volt battery. You're not going to make mass volumes of it. But what you are going to do is create a reaction that you're going to start separating the hydrogen and oxygen on the two plates. And this is using the electrolysis process. And then that recombining on the other side will still produce voltage. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so it's fully plausible to literally build a handheld device that would sit in your hand that would run off of a pin light battery that would separate the hydrogen and oxygen in really small quantities. And if you've ever watched my video, Hydrogen Danger, you can see that stuff is so volatile when it goes off that it makes such a loud noise outside the camera, but when you listen to the sound that's recorded by the camera, it happens so rapidly and it's so loud that all you hear is a pew! But if you were standing out there and actually heard the percussion of what hydrogen sounds like when it goes off, when it explodes or implodes, however it worked, it's loud. It sounds like a shotgun going off, or worse. So there's an acoustic wave being sent out that you could actually take that acoustic wave just from that little explosion or implosion, whichever way you want to go with it, and you could vibrate some piezoelectric crystals and set out some more juice just from that dang implosion. And what are you going to get whenever that's done? Out the other side, you're still going to get water.
Hey, I'm glad you brought up piezo crystals. About 3 days ago, I went in for my 6-month checkup with my heart doctor, and I happened to mention piezo crystals to him.
Yeah.
He says, check this out. He pulls out this little bitty thing. I mean, it was about half the diameter, well, about two-thirds the diameter of a number two pencil lead, and it was about, maybe 3/16 of an inch long. He said, we take this, we insert it into the lungs of a human being, and their breathing, the pressure of their breathing inside their lungs creates enough electricity to charge the batteries on their heart pacemaker.
See?
Yeah. I mean, dang, oh, man, that is cool.
Yeah, it is. Little kids been running around with them in their shoes for at least since, I think, back in the late 80s. Remember the little light-up tennis shoes?
Yeah. Hey, remember before we went on the air, I told you in the Netherlands, anyway, Amsterdam, one of the cities over there in the Netherlands. Anyway, there's a rock and roll disco club, nightclub, that their entire dance floor is made out of piezo crystals. There's enough people every night that dance on that dance floor, they power the entire nightclub off the people dancing on that floor. The entire club, all lighting, everything, their air conditioning, their heat, everything is powered by people dancing on that dance floor.
Well, imagine that same system in your house, if at the very least just to supplement your lighting. The kids running around in and out through the house all day. You know, there's so many ways. Heck, magnets on your door, you know, when they open the fan in the door, going in and out and slamming the door. Piezoelectric crystals in the doggone frame of the door, you know, and it, all over the floor. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
If you use every motion that nature has provided and that you provide, heck, your body puts off 98.6 degrees. So if you got a Peltier element stuck to your chest, and that heat from your chest is transferring into that Peltier element, and then the wind blowing on the other side is the temperature difference, you could use that to charge your doggone cell phone just by having it on your body.
Yep, good. Actually, your body gives off between 30 and 35 watts of power, not electricity, but power, in heat and sweat and other things. But human body, even at rest, sitting still in a chair, reading a book, your body produces 30 to 35 watts of actual power.
Well, and everybody knows that the heat rises, and so the most of the body heat's lost through your head. So if you got a hat on and you have a Peltier element in that, and you know, a little one of them little beanie fans on the top of it that would be circulating cold air around that thing. Heck, man, you could sit there and charge up one of them little bill lights that you have. You ever seen those that for working on stuff? They got these lights that'll clip to your the bill of your hat.
Yep, I got a couple of them.
Yeah, so it wouldn't even need solar, man. It'd work in the dark because it's just running off the body heat on your forehead. I mean, for Pete's sake, they got those little low temperature Stirling engines that you can put over the top of your coffee deal, and some of them that will actually run while you're holding it in your hand. It just from the heat off of your hand, it will actually run that little Stirling engine. So your body's a power plant, man.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Between piezoelectrics in the sole of your shoe and your continuous flexing of your arms and the heat off your body, you're wasting so much energy, and that's why you got to have all the doggone, calories. That's why you got to have all the calories, because your body generates a lot of heat, man. So, if you're wasting all this doggone heat, and then you build you a suit that is set up so that whenever you sit down, piezoelectric crystal gets bent or whatever, or you stand on your foot, or you flex your arm, or you move your head, or whatever, you got this suit on that is actually generating electricity, got all your electrical devices all plugged in your doggone suit, heck, man, you can charge your batteries up with it. And the battery technology and the graphene technology for supercapacitors these days is mind-boggling. So we're sitting right now on technology that could literally take us past the space age, or we're talking Star Trek kind of cool tools, you know what I mean?
Hey, think about this a minute. What about the people that love to sit in a rocket chair and just rock while they're watching television?
Yeah!
I mean, put your piezo crystals on your rockers. I mean, you're sitting there rocking anyway.
You could put
walk back and forth and make electricity all day long.
You could put a neodymium neosphere, mount it inside the, actually build the wood to where you can mount the wood inside Granny's rocking chair. You mount the magnet inside there with some coils, and every time Granny's rocking back and forth the deal, it'll charge up a battery to keep her book light going on so she can read her book at night.
Step further. I mean, how does she rock? She walks by taking her toe or the ball of her foot and pushing on the floor.
Yeah.
So put a piezo crystal in the ball of her foot, of her shoe, and then you have more piezo crystals on the rockers. I mean, she's sitting there powering the coffee pot.
Yep, there you go.
I mean, come on, man. There's so much waste going on.
Well, you know, as crazy as all this may sound, and everybody, the first thing that, the problem that I get whenever I tell people ideas like this is the first thing, you're just not going to generate enough power to do this or whatever. You know, we're not talking about running your whole house off of Granny's rocking chair, but we're talking about, you know, you could take and use that to supplement charging up some stuff, man. Imagine if Granny's going to sit there and rock for an hour or two in her deal watching TV and knitting or whatever, and she's sitting there rocking her chair, or Mama's rocking the baby, and you're trickle charging the battery while she's doing it, and when she's done, you got stored electricity sitting there waiting for you. You see what I mean? So if you had it strategically placed throughout your entire house, and you could have a little LED light system that would tell you when that thing's fully charged, and you can use it or not. See what I mean?
Yeah, you said something a minute ago about, somebody going to say, oh, man, it's just too expensive, this, that, look, I mean, it costs too much. Wait, do you know what a piezo crystal cost? I just bought 20 of them for less than $2. And that includes shipping. Come on, man. It's not that they're going expensive.
They got a device out there called the Roku that is basically hooks into Netflix and all these other deals. Well, I found out something really interesting about this doggone thing. If there is nobody moving in the room, if there is absolutely no motion in the room, this thing will literally pause itself. And I'm like, that's weird. All right. But if you think about it, when you're sitting still on the couch, you're not really constantly sitting still. There is some sort of motion going on. You're picking up your coffee mug, or putting your arm around your lady or whatever. But every so often, if it doesn't detect some sort of motion within a certain period of time, it will literally pause itself. Isn't that cool?
If you're alive, a human being or an animal, and you're alive, you're breathing. Therefore, there's motion.
Yep, and think about this for a second. Next time you go to the mall or one of the stores that have upgraded to hands-free, that you don't have to reach out and turn on a knob anymore, and while you're there, check out that they got these motion sensors that are actually in the restrooms now, that after somebody leaves, if nobody's in that restroom and there's no motion going on in that restroom, it has a circuit that will detect that there's no motion going on, and it will literally shut the lights off. You know, as long as there's motion within a certain period of time, you know, if you could stand still for, like, you know, let's say it was 15 minutes time. You could stand still for 15 minutes and the lights go off, right? If it didn't detect no motion, no nothing. You wait 15 minutes and comb your hair or something, and suddenly, the lights stay on. You never even notice it. But it's there. And those motion sensors, when you walk up to the restroom, use the restroom, and when you walk away, it flushes the toilet for you.
Yep. That's a good idea. That's not being lazy. That's a good idea, because actually, if you have to use your hand to flush a toilet, everybody has to. So therefore, who sanitizes the handle?
But you know how your moms and dads are always hollering, when you leave the room, turn the light off, I'm paying the electric bill, and you're running up the bill. Well, if you had those systems in your kids' room, you wouldn't even ever have to yell about turning the lights off anymore, because when they were gone for a few minutes and whatnot and going on in that room, the light would go off by itself.
Exactly.
So, you know, there's ways to save energy. There's ways to, basically, I'm telling you, if you can't find free energy in today's day and age with all the information that we've presented out here and everybody else has presented with all their YouTubes and stuff and all the different places to research out there, then you just don't need free electricity, because you ain't looking hard enough for it. It's there, you know. If you got the device and you can run it on water, then what's it costing you? You ain't going to the fuel station anymore. You're just getting your water. Get your water out of the creek, or have the rain catch it in a bucket. You see what I mean?
Get arrested by the man.
Yeah, get arrested by the man for collecting rainwater. That's why they don't want you collecting water, man, because they got to figure out a way before they allow this technology to go full stream. They need to have control and rights of the water, so that they're going to charge you, for every bit of water that you use. Suddenly, the world has a drought, man. suck all the aquifers dry, cause sinkholes to suck everybody's house down in the ground and all that kind of stuff, and call that an act of God. But then, hey man, don't worry, we got some water over here. We found a process of how to generate water, but only we can do it, so you have to buy your water from us. Of course, now, then you'll watch the price of water go up, like, you know, gas was up to $4 a gallon at one point. Watch how water will go up, too.
You know? $4 a gallon for water.
Yeah.
$3 a gallon for milk.
And if you get caught with any natural water, because the EPA set it up so that it's illegal for you to take water out of any natural stream in order to run in your vehicle, see? So,
and don't let your kids drink out of it.
Yeah. They'll figure out a way to do it, man. I'm telling you. But I'm here to tell you this. In the atmosphere alone, right now, there is hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen floating in the atmosphere right now. And even if you're in a desert, but it's humid outside, you can still separate that down, get that water back to, the hydrogen and oxygen into condense. You know, just by using a couple different processes, you know, like a piece of plastic and the sunlight beating down through the piece of plastic and the air that is in your container, it will actually combine the water and the hydrogen and oxygen into water. So it's a process that takes you a little bit of time to get a lot of water, but you can still get water right out of the doggone air. And it's already been on the market. They already have what's called a dehumidifier, and if you ever watched how those things work, it's the same exact process. You heat something up, and the air coming through there, the humid air will bring the hydrogen and oxygen in there. It'll condense into water, and then you got to dump the tray every so often, because if you ever left a doggone dehumidifier going long enough and didn't empty that tray out, you end up with a wet spot on your floor.
Think about air conditioning. I mean, everybody has to have a drain on the air conditioning.
Yeah. Bingo, you just said it again.
Yeah.
You got your electric car, right? And your electric car actually has an air conditioner on the doggone thing. And the heat on the outside and the temperature difference is actually going to create moisture, which if you ever watch a new car pull up and parks in a parking lot, and you'll notice that there's something dripping out from underneath it. They drain that water right out onto the ground.
That's distilled water.
Yeah. And so why couldn't you capture that water and run it back into your hydrogen cell from your air conditioner? So you don't even have to fill up your doggone, you don't even have to fill up your tank. The car fill it up for you.
No joke. That's cool. Oh man, there's so much out there that it boggles the mind. If you sit down and just think about it, it boggles the mind of how much information that actually exists that can be used. I mean, I've got so many projects going on in my head, I can't do anything because I don't know which one to start on first.
Well, that's why we need doggone dream team together. That's why we need to take Thomas's advice and do the whole networking and get it done, man. It's simple as that, because, you know, my biggest frustration in this whole deal is I'm sitting here looking at all the answers, right? I'm looking at all the answers, but there's like this big glass shield in front of me, and I can't reach over there and grab this piece over here because somebody got, you know, behind the shield. Throw the pieces of the puzzle on the table, put your dream team together, and just build the doggone stuff, for Pete's sake. It's as simple as that. I mean, 90% of what you need to build a hydrogen cell, you can go right straight down to the doggone dump and pick it up, man. There's old stainless steel down in the dump, and there's freaking plastic bottles that you could use to separate the plates, so on and so forth. There's so much wasted material out there that could be repurposed and recombined to actually build you a hydrogen cell just for the electrolysis portion of the deal. All right? And so what? If it's taking you several hours to pressurize a tank using a low-powered hydrogen cell, so what? You didn't pay nothing for it. You got the stuff out of the trash. You used some old junk batteries to do the electrolysis process. You got an old secondhand solar panel that's keeping that battery charged up. And one thing you'll find out about hydrogen is that when the hydrogen and oxygen separate, it releases pressure, and that will literally pressurize a tank. I had a hydrogen cell, literally, because I didn't glue the top on good enough, it literally blew the top off of it, never even ignited the hydrogen at all. It just pressurized so much that it blew the top right off the doggone thing. And so I had to glue it down real good, because I had water everywhere.
Well, you know, hydrogen and oxygen, under a certain amount of pressure, will self-ignite. But the thing is, it is a tremendous amount of pressure, because hundreds of people have built fuel cells and split hydrogen and oxygen into HHO and burned it in the automobile, and they still have to have a spark plug to ignite it. And the automobile builds a pressure of 250 to 300 PSI, and it does not self-ignite at that pressure. So the actual pressurizing, that my point, I brought this up several times before. If you put a Joe cell in a container sealed with a hose at the bottom of your container going up into the air, you can actually produce pressure pushing down on the water, causing it to go up in the air into another container. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a couple of hundred pounds of water 30, 40 feet off the ground, and you release it on a pulley system, and it turns a generator. So now you've used your HHO to produce electricity without actually burning it.
Can one of you guys add Barry to the call? He tried to call in just a second ago.
No, I don't know how to do that.
Thomas, can you do it?
Thomas. Barry's here.
Is he in here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Barry,
you there?
There's a little white cuff. Let's pick him.
He hasn't picked up yet.
Oh, okay.
He, all he's got to do now is just go ahead and hit the join thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Barry, hit the join button. Or I could end this call and call everybody back, because I got you all listed now. Let me do that.
All right.
Do-do-do-do-do. We're trying to get Barry in here. All right, try this again. Yay! All right, who we got? We got.
Yeah.
Now all Barry's got to do is pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Pick up the phone, Barry!
Maybe he's trying to and Skype isn't letting him.
Oh, that stinks. Maybe you don't see it. All right, well, anyway, until we get him...
It's a Skype attack.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me now in these day and age. Anyway, we've explained a lot of technology here. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory in my brain. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. You know, knowing how much power is actually in a water molecule and the things that you can do and then the exhaust that comes out of it, you think... That was disgusting, man.
Forgot to turn your mic off.
Oh, yeah, you did forget to turn your mic off. That's on. It's going to be on the podcast, too, man. Yeah, but that was Raymond that did that. It wasn't Thomas, and it wasn't me.
Just now.
Barry, you in here now?
Well, Barry's in here now, thanks.
Okay. Barry, turn your microphone on. Look, we talk about low-tech crew, man. Low-tech crew with high-tech ideas.
There you go.
Anyway, so basically, you know, you got all the environmentalists out there trying to save the planet, and you got the government telling you got to reduce your carbon footprint, and here's a fuel that will actually run machinery and produce electricity without any type of carbon-based emissions or anything like that. So in my mind, it's a no-brainer. Now,
the funny thing is, there's people out there thinking we're crazy, okay? They're thinking, well, these idiots, they don't know what they're talking about. The thing is, there's not one technology we have mentioned on this program today that is not 8 to 12 years old.
Yep, and it's all proven technology. All you got to take the time to research it out there. People are like, well, I don't know how to make a hydrogen cell. Well, it's as simple as having two plates of doggone stainless steel. It's probably the best because it doesn't release a lot of crud in the water. But there's stainless tubing that you can use and seems to get a better results. And anybody can find a magnet. If you can't find a magnet, then you just need to wait for somebody to build it for you. But, you know, you take those two plates, you got them, you know, in the water down in there. You hook you have a DC battery up to it, and you'll see these little bubbles coming up. Well, on, I can't remember what you, negative side for hydrogen and positive side for the oxygen portion. That's what you'll, the difference of the bubbles on both sides will be.
So okay, Craig, you said people are going to say, that's just too expensive. Too expensive? Come on. 1,000 Piazzo crystals. $100. Wow. Oh, that's too expensive? Come on, give me a break. Get some Piazzo crystals and hook her up to Grandma's rocker.
Well, the biggest portion of the whole problem isn't necessarily that the technology is not available, because they are actually building hydrogen generators and hydrogen cars. But the expense that it takes for somebody to be able to buy one is like the Tesla car, man. You should check out the price tag on those things. It's the batteries in there that'll kill you. Without the batteries, it probably might be in the range of affordability, but with the batteries and everything, I think the price that I heard was like $150,000 for a car, man. That's, to me, that's like several houses, and I could rent a few of them out and get some money back.
You go.
But
we like to build it.
But either way, the technology's out there, and they're actually building it. What I think the biggest problem isn't that you don't have access to the knowledge on how to do it. It's the expense of actually getting somebody to manufacture it, and then that and the feuding going on between, there are actually feuds going on between separate, you know, like the difference between the hydrogen hybrid car or the all-electric car or the hydrogen cell car, you know, it's competition. So this guy will say, yeah, well, that process stinks because it does this or that, and the other guys will, no, ours is better, ours will go farther than his or whatever, you know. And so people sitting out there watching the commercials for these TVs might overlook this car over there. Man, jump on the bandwagon and just support one that you like, and try to buy the doggone thing, for Pete's sake, man. If it runs on water and you don't have to pay for fossil fuel and you're getting your whole save the planet thing down and reducing your carbon footprint, then you're practicing what you preach. Otherwise, you're just out there with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying save the trees, and you look like an idiot. Yeah.
Want everybody else to save trees, but you're going to cut one down so that you put your sign on it.
And by God, don't make one out of plastic, because now you're plugging up the dumps when you're done with that sign. Are you going to repurpose that into something else, like a fan or a fly swatter or something?
There you go.
You know what I mean? But the waste in the industry, the continuous battle back and forth, everybody trying to make more money than the other guy or whatever, you know, the fuel industry trying to slow the process down. Hydrogen is on out there, and it's coming. It's going to be mainstream at some point, you know. And I'm excited about it, because it's, in my mind, hydrogen technology is proof positive of free energy. Once you get that doggone thing together, if you got the device in your hand and all you got to do is go down a creek and dip some water out and maybe filter it up so you ain't putting crud down in your tank, you know, silting up your tank, then what you got going on right now is you didn't have to pay for that fuel, and you're just running the machine to get the electricity. And as far as wind power, man, there's people out there doing things. Do you remember the last show that we did, and I talked about how Muddy put the solar panel on the top of his truck to keep his alternator from ever kicking on, because the solar panel was charging up his battery, and so the alternator never detected that the voltage regulator never detected that the voltage ever got low on the battery, and so the battery, then the alternator never kicked on. Well, they've got a If you go to Harbor Freight, it costs you $14 to buy it. They have a solar panel that has, you can stick it up in the front of your window, and you can plug it right into your cigarette lighter, and it will charge your battery in your car. So whenever you get, let's say you got a slow drain on your car, right? And this puts out like 1.5 watts. It's all it is. And it plugs into your cigarette lighter. And so whenever you're parked and you're in there doing your shopping, you don't have to worry about coming out there to a dead car battery and your car not starting. Because it's charging your battery with a solar panel right there in the windshield of your car.
Yes, right? And the fact that an alternator drains a lot of horsepower out of the motor when it does kick in.
Yeah, especially when you're turning on your doggone lights and your doggone air conditioner and your heater or your fan or whatever. All of that. But every single bit, even the fan itself, you don't even have to have a fan in there. As long as you got some sort of waste heat coming on, you could actually build a system that would turn the fan blade to keep your heat circulating in your car without using any electricity. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. In fact, they make a device to where you hold your window down just a little bit, stick it up there, and you hold your window up tight on it. And it has this solar power, and it's a fan that actually draws the hot air out of your car. You do one window crack of about an inch on one side, put this device into the other window on the other side of the car, and it circulates the air to where your car doesn't heat up to 140 degrees inside during the summer.
Yeah.
It's already there. Well, so, 10 years ago.
So for every problem, there's a solution out there.
Yes.
So Barry, you called in. Did you have something on your mind, brother?
Yeah, I'm just enjoying your conversation there. Just
well,
talking about hydrogen cells, and I'll tell you, to me, it's just a matter of knowledge, man. I think if the human race knew, everybody on the planet knew right now that we could run our cars on water, there would be a voice so loud that it would be heard around the planet. I mean, that would sure throw a conch into their climate change agenda, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, here, let me point out another goodie for you. Let me point out another goodie for you. The reason why I brought up that little solar panel that you stick up in your window, imagine this. You're running a hydrogen cell, right? And you're running low on fuel. So you tell your family, oh, we're going to go over here and stop at the mall for a couple hours. You got a solar panel up in your back window of your car, and the sun's beating down on that, and it's putting energy in there and doing the electrolysis. It's pumping up your doggone fuel. So while you're sitting there, it's generating more fuel for you. So you don't even have to fill the tank anymore, for Pete's sake. Right? You're recirculating the water. The sun is making fresh fuel for you.
Well, you know, too, also, and everybody here sitting knows that if the hydrogen cell was put into mass production, the cost factor for the vehicle would come down to way below what it costs to buy a conventional vehicle now. So it's just a matter of getting the knowledge out there. I mean, if the money spent on weapons was spent on hydrogen cell research for 3 months, we'd have hydrogen cells that would be so efficient that fossil fuels would be an instant thing of the past.
Yeah,
it's a no-brainer, man. Guys, people just have to wake up to this. I post about it all the time on my Facebook, and people go, huh? What? What are you talking about? I go, you know, it's a reality. You can run your automobile on water. What would you rather? You go down to the gas station and support these corporate giants that are destroying the world, or go down to a creek and pour a little water and throw it in your tank?
All right, now let me throw one more thing on you. All right, check this out. When you're in your car and you got your heater going full blast so you can stay warm, it's cold outside the car. And so if you had a little device set up down there, like say on the floor right next to the doggone heater, when the heat is beating down on them Peltier elements and the cold on the outside is producing the difference, then you got electricity being pumped back right into the doggone battery again. So you can charge the doggone battery with the same heat that you're using to stay warm in the car. You can use solar, you can use wind power, some turbines put down in some really cool looking hood scoops in your car. And you're generating as you're going down the road. You got doggone wheels turning, four wheels turning on the road. You're taking that motion and you're spinning magnets past coils and you're generating even more electricity going through that whole deal.
Barry Prince just said something a minute ago that was exactly right along with what I just said 3 or 4 minutes ago. Acknowledge The thing is, we have not mentioned a single thing of technology that is less than 8 years old. Some of the stuff we talked about is 12, 15 years old. This is technology that does not exist today. It's not something of the future. It's been in existence. And Barry said it. People need to be educated. They need to understand this stuff exists.
Hey, Raymond, here's one that'll make you happy since you like the piezoelectric deal. You got a brake pedal that you have to put pressure on.
There you go.
And if you drive a standard transmission, you have a clutch pedal as well. So every time you put pressure on there to push your clutch in or put on the brake, hey, you're generating juice, man. People power. Woo!
What about crystals in the seat of your vehicle? I mean, nobody sits absolutely perfectly still in an automobile. You're constantly moving around.
Yep.
Come on, man. These things don't cost hardly anything.
The whole thing is, man, look. My favorite show out there
Soylent
was...
Soylent Power is made by people.
Yeah. My favorite show, it was Junkyard Wars. And the reason why I like Junkyard Wars is because they put these guys, two teams, inside a junkyard. And they'd have them go out there and they would give them a project to build. One of them was like they built a car that would run on water and land, and they made it all out of junk. And they had other things that they did. They did tons of projects. But either way, these guys had so much time to go out and scavenge up parts. They drew up their plans. They had so much time to go out and scavenge up parts and then so much time to build it. And whoever built the best gizmo at the end was the winner. But we're talking about, you're watching these guys build stuff out of junk, man. And if the average Joe was to take some of this knowledge, even just bits and pieces of it, the solar panel on the roof, like Muddy said, the piezoelectric crystals in the brake pedals in the seat, or the Peltier elements, you know, whatever, all these different devices, and at the very least, supplementing your doggone, keeping your alternator from kicking on nearly as much, and if you can continuously keep it from kicking on, you're going to gain horsepower because your engine don't have to work so hard, and then you're going to save, you know, your battery. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. What about the muffler and the tailpipe of your vehicle? Why is it round? Make it square so it's got flat surfaces, and glue your Peltier devices to your muffler. Therefore, when you're running down the road, you're making electricity.
So, if you the people out there really want to save money, it's simple, man. First off, saving money is the easiest portion, because all you got to do is take some of this technology we're talking about, like the LEDs that Raymond's been installing for companies, so they can save money. And the doggone, there's so many different products out there. Take one light bulb off your power grid at one a month, just one light bulb off every month, and then use this money that you save to reinvest in taking another light bulb the next month. Before it's all said and done, you're running all your lighting off of just solar or wind. All right, so what have you lost? Yeah, lost nothing. You gain, and you don't need a huge solar panel in order to charge a large battery bank. You get a 5 or 10 batteries and charge that thing up and look on the side of the battery, it'll tell you how many amp hours it has on there. It'll tell you how long that'll last, and you do the math, you'll know how long you can run whatever load you're running. And if you're just running LED lights, then you charge your doggone, they got them, man, they got them for sheds. It's a little solar, it costs about $30. You get a little small solar panel. It has a LED light system with rechargeable batteries in there. And the solar panel goes outside. You put the light anywhere inside your shed that you want. And then you got an on and off switch, like a little chain that you pull down. And you can turn it on and off. Whenever you're not using it, it's charging the batteries. And when you need it, it's already there, man. It's ready to go. There's one light source that you ain't, once you paid for the doggone piece that you're using, you don't have to pay for the electricity for that room anymore.
You know, Shazes, the thing is, you mentioned the fact that I started a company to help people change out to from fluorescent lighting to LEDs. The thing is, I don't just help them do that. I can teach them and show them how they can do it. without taking one penny out of their pocket.
Well, there you go, man. So,
all you do is contact. You own a business, small business, big business, I don't care what. You use a light up fluorescent lighting, I can show you how to change over to LEDs and not take one penny out of your pocket. You will cut your electric bill by anywhere from 20 to 42%. If you're using T12, you can cut your electric bill, lighting bill, by 60%. If you're using incandescents, you can cut your lighting bill by over 85%. I will more than happy teach anybody how to do it. All they have to do is just contact me. That's it.
Well, you know what? Even if you're only saving a penny a day, you throw that penny in a jar and pennies add up, man. That's
Savings up.
What'd you say, Thomas?
I said penny saves a penny earned, eh?
Oh, that was Barry who said that. Hey, Barry, can you come closer to your mic?
You're having a hard time hearing me?
Yeah, you're kind of low. You sound like you're standing back in the closet and then hollering out the keyhole.
Yeah, I'm actually probably going to have to go get a new mic because people are telling me they're having a hard time hearing. I think my my receiver's breaking down or something.
Just talk louder.
Okay, I'll talk louder. How's that?
Yeah, that's good.
Let my neighbors hear me.
Oh, I'll just say... I'll just sit here and use my side to beef you up a little bit. I can sit there and turn that volume down.
I want to say your string on that can is getting worn pretty thin there.
Yeah. Hey, if you want a good string, Barry, the best, strongest string you're going to get, go down to the fishing deal, and they got this stuff called spider wire. And that ain't no joke, man. Harold Inslee endorses, Abu Garcia, rod and reel, with spider wire on there. I pulled in a log with spider wire, and it didn't break at all.
Wow.
The only thing I got at the other end was my hook was getting straight.
Well, let me ask you guys a question here. What do you think, realistically, what would it, like, to produce a hydrogen engine for a car, all you have to do is, I was watching a video, correct me if I'm wrong, but all you have to do is change a couple parts on a conventional engine to have it run off of hydrogen, correct?
Yeah, that's it. A couple small parts.
So what's it going to cost? What's it going to cost to convert a normal engine that everybody runs around in right now to running on hydrogen? What can you put on the market that people could buy without the government killing you? I think the government would kill you if they saw this come on the market.
Well,
they're going to fight this tooth and nail. You know that, because it goes against everything.
Oh, doing. Yeah. You got to have at least a couple $100,000 or a couple $1 million worth of testing done before, you can release your product, or else it's not going to. The second somebody puts it on their vehicle, the insurance company isn't going to cover them anymore.
Right. There'll be all kinds of loopholes to get around.
That's why I say...
But there's people in this community that talk to me now, Shaziz, that are multi-millionaires. And, I'd like to put something like this in front of Mr. Munson, one of the gentlemen in this town that I know that kind of looking at things right now. He's looking at solar, he's looking at a few other things. And, boy, I'll tell you, there is people around with money.
Under $100... Under $100... You can literally modify your car to run on hydrogen, and that's
under a hundred bucks.
Well, all right, you wouldn't even have to use your battery to do it, man. You could have I don't know if you've ever seen before, there are like these little generators that they stick on bicycle tires, right? And While the doggone tire's spinning, that turns this little generator that runs the light bulb on your bicycle. So when you're pedaling, it's charging the light up, all right, and keeping the battery charged up. And so you could put a totally separate battery, maybe even just a lawn and garden battery in there. And having that doggone thing generating power for your hydrogen cell while you're driving down the doggone road. And it wouldn't be that big of a deal to modify something under the fender of your car, like that old bicycle generator, that you could reach down and hit a button whenever you're using it that would turn, a little hydraulic would lift that thing up off of there, and it wouldn't be running. But whenever you wanted to use the hydrogen portion of it or charge up your hydrogen, you could set that, push that button, and it would have those little wheels connected to your tires of your car. And it's like all external, so you can make these modifiable to any vehicle out there, and you could have the wheel of the car itself turning a generator that is actually running the energy that you need for the doggone hydrogen cell itself. You see what I'm saying?
If I said to most people in my community right now that I could convert your vehicle to running on water for $100, they would lock me up. They'd think I was absolutely insane. So what you're talking about, Shiz, is it just gets my mind going in a million different directions. We got to get this information out to people.
Well,
people got to realize it's a reality. Because if we realize it's a reality, we'll demand it.
They got these bicycle engines out there, and it would probably take us probably about $300 or $400 to prove it. All right. But they got these bicycle engines out there that run on gasoline, all right? It's got a little gas tank. And you can modify that same little bicycle engine to run on hydrogen. So we could actually build generators that while you're pedaling this bike down the road, it would produce hydrogen and start running that doggone engine. So here's the deal. You're already rolling down the road, so you don't even have to turn the key to crank it over. So you're not going to have to worry about a battery to get it started. You just start pedaling, and then when the engine kicks on, it gets easier and easier to pedal. And then at some point, the engine just takes over because you're rolling down the road. And if it ever starts to slow down, you just pedal a little bit. So now you got a hydrogen electrical assist freaking bicycle that is running you down the road, man. You could prove it with that technology right there, with a bicycle and a cheaply made hydrogen cell and a little generator, and have a bicycle that would run on hydrogen. It'd be that simple.
There's actually a video on YouTube right now. A guy down in Brazil did exactly what you're talking about.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, he's running his little bicycle for about 320 kilometers, I think it was, on 7 ounces of water.
So now what you need to do is download that video. Download that video and put it on.
It was taken off. It disappeared right away.
Well, then we need to do another video. And we need to do another video so you can download that and take that DVD to your friend over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
like,
and
put it in front of him.
And say, watch
this. See what his reaction is.
All right. And, man, I'll tell you what. You could sneak in the back door of a market. Ain't no joke. Because, you know, one of the things that people mess up with, they get something that if you can't put perpetual motion. You can't claim perpetual motion in any patent. They won't even look at it. All right. But if that just happens to somehow be one of the side effects off of a device that you're patenting, you can call it whatever you want. You know? Yeah, this is what it does. You know, it runs off of this, you know? And you ain't got nothing that says perpetual motion anywhere in this entire patent. You might be liable to get a patent and sneak it right underneath the radar. You see what I mean?
I hear you. You know, it just goes to show you is how well they have kept this away from the public. You know, Raymond was saying this information has been out there for 10, 12 years now.
Yep.
And yet the public isn't aware of it. So it just goes to show you how well they keep it away from people. I think our mission should be to get this information out to people everywhere.
Well,
I spend time now talking to people about this because, you know, this whole climate change agenda is based on the consumption of fossil fuels. And if we took that onion away from them, they'd have nothing to stand on.
Yep. There you go.
That day's coming, man.
Well,
that information out.
And nuclear power, you know,
think of the past.
These folks out there, if they only understood the power potential that water has, there wouldn't be no more boiling water to get steam anymore. If you was boiling water, you'd be doing it in a totally different process, but you wouldn't be using highly refined radioactive rods to do it. So now you ain't got an issue for the doggone. See, this technology's been available. They know it's available. But, man, there's money in uranium. Why would you want to take uranium off the market if you're going to make so much money off of it? You see what I mean?
Exactly.
So they're not going to come out and voluntarily do this. I'm just saying the best way to go about it is for the average Joe to just start building it. And when your neighbor says, how come you don't go to the gas station anymore?
I'm putting my car at work. water.
Because I go over to the convenience store and buy me some bottled water, and I just dump some of that down in my car. You see what I mean? And if you want to make your electrolysis process even better, you go to the doggone store and you can buy a 2-liter bottle of some of them call it fizzy water, some of it call it seltzer water, some of it just call it carbonated water. All right, that carbonated water, you should run it in the in your hydrogen cell, because you don't have to add no salt to it, because it's got the little carbonation in there, the CO2. Right. And it makes it conductive as heck, man. And you'll get your electrolysis process kicking with carbonated water. I've done it. You know, it's amazing. And if you don't think that...
You're not talking about seltzer water, are you?
Yeah.
Okay, that I don't think that's carbonation. You might take a quick look. I think there's actually something else in that that makes it conductive, which has a metal in it. I mean, salt makes water conductive because of the sodium.
Well, sodium's
a metal.
The water that I got, it had bubbles in it just like CO2, and it was carbonated. It was just carbonated water. It's all. And you could actually take this. You could buy a 2-liter of this carbonated water, and you could go out and buy certain types of syrup, and you could make your own soda with it. And it only costs like 79 cents for a 2-liter. But it works great in your fuel cells. So basically what I'm saying is, if the average Joe just went out and used this technology and just did it, don't go asking your government, hey, can I put this on my car? Just put it on there. It's your car. You know? You ain't going to blow yourself up if you're doing it right. But if you got something that's pushing out tons and tons and tons and tons of volumes of hydrogen, and then you light a match, well... we'll see you on the next next planet, or the next time zone.
I'm seeing here sodium bicarbonate is sometimes there's sometimes contamination in that seltzer water. So,
well, whatever the brand, I have to get. I think it was the Always Save brand that I used. I don't know what was in it.
Yeah, there's probably some contaminants in there, and that's probably where a big portion of the conductivity. Either way, the point is, why would you need to go ahead and buy all that stuff whenever, you know, you were just talking about seawater. Seawater's already got conductivity in it.
Yeah.
It's an electrolyte already.
But I just pointed out, it's an option out there, you know?
Right.
And if you could take a 2-liter bottle of seltzer water or carbonated water and drive back and forth to work all week, then, hey, what's the problem? 79 cents a week sounds pretty good to me.
Well, if you get your hands on some Coca-Cola and you remove the, actually, you probably don't have to remove any of that stuff, because you're electrolyzing it. It's got phosphoric acid in it, so it's going to give it all the conductivity it needs. And phosphoric acid is actually what they use for removing rust and protecting metal afterwards, so it doesn't re-rust.
Well, see, in reality, you don't even need any salt in there. The only reason why to raise the conductivity up there is to speed up the process.
Right.
You could use distilled water to make hydrogen and oxygen, because the molecules are still the same.
Or just increase the voltage in that distilled water.
And that...
And while you're at it, why are you letting that go out your tailpipe?
Negative.
Run it back through a cooling system and collect it back in your tank and crack it again.
Yeah.
Negative. Distilled water will not conduct electricity.
Are you saying that I couldn't produce hydrogen with just distilled water and voltage?
Exactly. You cannot do it because...
Well, I'm going to have to go back in my lab and rerun the same experiment, because I actually went out and bought distilled water and produced hydrogen with distilled water and two stainless steel plates.
Can I ask you a question?
What?
Did you clean the stainless steel plates and the container?
No.
Okay, you had trash in the water. Any trash in distilled water, any trash, make the water conductive.
Well, how are you going to clean the stainless steel plates anyway? Because whatever cleaner you use might be conductive as well.
No, it's acetone, because when acetone evaporates,
yes,
it's simply zero.
Well, I'm going to have to try that and redo that experiment, because I know I run hydrogen off of distilled water before.
Clean everything with acetone. Everything. Clean it with acetone. Then put your distilled water in it and see if it'll work. It will not work. It will not work. The distilled water, pure distilled water, will not conduct electricity.
So then it's good to have some trash.
Distilled water, pure, I mean clean. Put electrodes in one side of your container and one on the other side, and the light bulb, and it will not light. Stick your finger in the water, you'll get the heck knocked out of it, because you're going to get shot, because the salt and the grease and oils on your finger contaminate the water and make it electrolytic.
Well, with all the doggone stuff that they put in normal tap water, I'd just say just use that. Save yourself some money.
Just plain old tap water will work. Too much trash in it.
And in your local creek, there's probably tons of iron laying down in the creek, so there's some conductivity to that. So you got crud in your creek, you can use that.
Yep.
Either way, it's still, I don't care. It's still not going to discourage me from hydrogen. Now,
well, if it's not conductive, that makes it a dielectric, and any dielectric can be broken down with enough voltage.
Well,
so it's not that hard to convert. In fact, the piezoelectric technology we were talking about, air is a better dielectric than water is. And if you notice those electric lighters, when you squeeze down on that thing, it's just popping a piezoelectric component to generate a bolt of lightning to shoot from the little conductive rod that's connected to that, to the one that the metal rod that the butane gas is coming out of to light it. So,
good, I love it.
So why couldn't you just...
You could drive that through that water, and when it jumps across there, it's the potential, the electron potential that's on those two plates that's actually separating the water, because on one side it's wanting, it's hungry for electrons, so it's taking the electrons from the atom that's basically willing to give them away. And on the other side, it's got electrons wanting to give away, and it's attracting the atom that's willing to soak those electrons up.
So why couldn't you just aerate the water, man, and then fire it in there?
Well, you don't need to. You can literally jump that voltage across those plates in that water as it is.
Well, heck, that makes it even better, because you could take a doggone stove igniter to produce hydrogen doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting even better, man. It doesn't matter. All these little ideas in conjunction with one another, people take these ideas and they go out there and they do a hands-on experiment. So you do experiment and it don't work. So what? Move on. Go to something else. Find what does work. Start using it. And then... For everybody who does that, the man gets less and less money in his pocket, and he don't feel so emboldened to keep trying to hide technology, because it's like Pandora's box. Once you let that information out, there ain't no way to put it back. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, if you put a diaphragm between the two, that's it's basically can be, you can, if you can lay it down in water and it'll soak the water up, like to clean something up, but it doesn't tear, and stretch that in between the two plates and put two dissimilar salts in there, so that basically the two pieces of metal you've got down in there as your plates will not break down the metal that it's in contact with, you can still basically, you have a salt bridge at that point that you can conduct electricity through without damaging the plates you're using too. So you use stainless on one side and aluminum on the other, and or copper on one side and iron on the other, just depending on what salt's in there with it. Make sure it's something that we were talking about, the phosphoric acid, that's good enough to basically create a conductivity on the iron side, and it won't erode the iron then.
Well, probably about 2 or 3 days back, I was listening to a guy talking about using the galvanic action to actually produce hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway...
Like blowing steam over raw iron. extract the hydrogen out of it, because the oxygen gets trapped in the iron, turning it into rust.
Stephen Gibbons posted a video over there at shazizradio.com/superchat.html, the story of the Joe cell. He said, if you're going to try to make a Joe cell, you need an engine you can manually adjust the timing. He says, as it will need to fire 180 degrees off normal, as the gas is implosive, not explosive. Watch the vid when he lights the gas, it implodes and extinguishes. So that was the answer to my question earlier, whether it was explosive or implosive. But either way, there you go, man. So the technology's out there. The links are available for you. We post it on Shaziz Radio all the time. There's tons and tons of ideas out there.
You know, I've got a question. I read somewhere, and I don't know if it's true or not, so I'm going to ask you, is anybody knows, with hydrogen and oxygen in the proper proportion, burns. It burns at 6,000 degrees. Is that correct or not?
Well, actually, I watched a video where this guy was actually... he was showing how they made a torch. Instead of using oxygen and acetylene, that the actual temperature coming up out of there wasn't... It was only a couple hundred degrees out off the end of that nozzle. He actually waved his hand in front of it. But for some reason, when he put the flame near any material, he melted lead with it, he melted steel with it, he melted ceramic with it. He was able to take and get the doggone temperature of something else. I can't remember what the heck it was. He turned a steel pipe cherry red in a matter of seconds, and it was evenly cherry red. Something about the way that the hydrogen and oxygen interacted with whatever material came in front of it created an amazing anomaly out of the deal.
I saw that same video, and the thing is, it not only when he passed his hand across it, it not burned the hand, but when he put it on water, it did not heat the water either.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. But they were... Instead of using oxygen in the acetylene tanks, all you had was water going on there. They had the doggone deal of making the hydrogen right there on demand. And so, you know, he was showing how he was brazing copper, you know, sealing up the joints and copper tubing in a matter of seconds with this deal.
Yeah. You know, why couldn't you put a bunch of solar panels on a couple barges offshore, making electricity to electrolyte, whatever you call it, separate seawater into hydrogen oxygen, burn that, make electricity with it, and the byproduct is clean, fresh water, solving the drought problem.
Yeah, and even if you didn't want the fresh water off of the doggone deal, you could just let it evaporate and go right back into the system, so you're not even polluting.
Who wouldn't want the fresh water? My God, that is the biggest problem in California.
Just saying, there ain't no waste. Nature takes back what you don't use.
Exactly. But the thing is, they need the water.
Yeah.
For the water, not for the electricity, but get the electricity anyway.
So,
water where you need it.
So it's a twofer, right?
Yeah, it's a twofer. I mean, you know, so you don't make as much electricity for burning it as it takes to make it, but look at your byproduct. Go for the byproduct.
Well,
go for the byproduct.
Like I said, look, there's four of us in this call right now, all right? And the four of us have put on the table so many solutions out there, so many ideas that people can actually research and find out that, like Stan Myers, for example, he's running around in the 70s, the late 70s, in a dune buggy that he was running on water. And he's not the only guy that's ever done it. They've done it since. There's a guy that's running his motorcycle on water, all right? And he was using a different technique than what they were doing to literally condition the water before he ever even put it in the fuel tank, where it would automatically, once it hit the doggone chamber, it would ignite. And he was running off You could drink the stuff when he was done with it.
That's my point.
So,
it's not a problem in California. Water is a problem.
Yep. Well, they said that the only problem, the only byproducts that the waste that the fuel cells had was waste heat and produced water. So, what do you got to lose? You build the barges like he's talking about. Put one down there if you live near the ocean. Put one down there in the little bay down there, and run your doggone house off of that, man. I mean, shoot, it's. man, look, if you can't find free energy, you're just simply not looking hard enough, or you just don't really want to put the effort into doing it, all right? Now, you can wait around for a few years, and all of this technology that we're talking about, it will finally make it to market. There's no way that they can stop it now that it's already out there. Pandora's box is open. Now it's just a case of how long can they take to rip the Band-Aid off, right? Slowly but surely. I'm in the like mind of I think we should just rip the Band-Aid off quickly and make it as painless as possible. But they want to take their time because they want to make as much money off of their product, which is the same product that everybody keeps hollering about, putting carbon emissions and then creating the 20 inches of snow on my driveway. See? So
global warming, you know, Shazam.
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen it yet and you want a real hoot, go over to Shaziz on YouTube and look at my video, How to Properly Panic During Global Warming. All right? Now, you pay attention in that video, and then when global warming hits, you'll be safe because you'll know how to properly panic. What more can I say, man? It's just I had to point out the ludicrous when somebody's sitting there telling me how the planet's heating up and I got snow up to my neck out there. I mean, what are you going to do, man? You just got to laugh in the face of all of it. I'm shoveling 20 inches of snow off my driveway hollering about the global warming freaks, and the global warming freaks are attacking me on my comment section. Because they don't get it. Well, you said the planet was heating up. You said the polar ice caps were going to melt. Well, the polar ice caps maybe are melting, but they moved to my house. They're on my driveway. Your plan failed.
They'll keep pushing the agenda, though.
Yeah, they will. There's money in it.
Well, of course there is, and it's not about the money anyway. It's about a control mechanism they're implementing on society. And if people don't see that, then they really have their heads in the sand. I've studied climate change here quite a bit lately, and I've looked at the satellite images, and I've looked at the temperature change in the last 20 years, and it's not even remarkable. Yet, of course, we hear this agenda all the time that we're destroying the planet, that we're going to kill the planet, that we have to shut down industry, we have to stop burning our wood stoves, we have to do this, we have to do that to save the planet. It's all
that's right. We got to shut the industry down. We got to shut the industry down and send it all to China.
Send it all to China.
Yeah.
Take the money out of North America and send it overseas.
What are you working here for, man? Make them Chinese work.
Well, yeah,
we're just selling the land up right out from underneath our feet to get those iPhones after they get done making them.
All right, let me put a scenario down for you guys. Let me put a scenario down for you guys. This is going to be a hoot, all right? Because you know how I can, like, do the words and stuff. All right, check this out. All right, so all the environmentalists out there, they managed to get their agenda through, all right? We have no more gasoline. We have no more industry, all right? We have no more electricity. And we got a little bit of electricity, but it's only for those that can afford the solar panels. But you're getting taxed on those. All right. So anyway, the wind and the solar isn't just quite cutting it at this point in the game, right? So now everybody's out there freezing, right? So everybody needs clothes, but they can't get clothes because all the clothes have biodegraded by now, and they're all rotted. They look and they stink, and so nobody wants to be around you because your clothes reek. But either way, you're cold. You're cold as all get out. And so you see this big old grizzly bear running by, and you're like, that grizzly bear got a doggone nice looking fur coat, man. So you're going to run over there and you're going to blast a grizzly bear and you're going to have the doggone animal activist all over your back because you just killed this grizzly bear. So now it's to the point where you can't kill the grizzly bear anymore, so now you're running around like the emperor with no clothes because you can't kill the grizzly bear to borrow his suit, and you can't get no clothes because industry's down. You can't burn no fuel to run any generators to get the doggone mills to make the materials for whatever you need. And so, wait a second, there is a plus in this whole deal. Look, there's a whole lot of hemp growing over there. Let's go knit us some clothes. So now you're essentially running around in the equivalence of a burlap sack hollering about how freaking much your body itches like. But, you know, there's ways to make it.
No, they'll be chasing you down to arrest you because you're wearing something illegal.
Yeah, he's got a dope shirt on, man.
Or you didn't pay taxes on that shirt.
Right.
That looks right. Running drugs, man.
Yeah, you see what yep. I... Yeah, he's running drugs. Hey, you try to elude the cops and take off running.
I'm not running drugs. I'm running in drugs.
But therein lies the ludicrousy of the whole deal. It falls back to the same that you're sitting there holding a wooden stick with a paper sign and you're saying, save the trees. All right? Look, if you don't want the fur coat off the animals, then at least let industry keep the fabric portions going. But wait a second, a lot of those doggone nylons and stuff, where does that material come from, anybody?
Oil.
Oil. We're back to fossil fuels again.
I'm asking a question. And who or what company is responsible for outlawing hemp in the United States?
I don't know, man.
Wasn't Henry Ford, so...
No.
He was wanting to use it.
Tupac was responsible for it because they were right at the beginning of the Second World War, and Tupac came out with nylon and was making rope. All the rope the Navy used for their ships was made of hemp.
But
so Tupac paid off a bunch of lobbyists in Congress to get him outlawed in the United States.
But Raymond, how much energy did they have to use to produce the doggone nylon?
More than the hemp.
Did they have to burn any fossil fuels to do it?
Nope. No, they didn't burn the fossil fuel. They chemically changed it into...
Yeah, but see, they had to generate electricity somehow.
Yeah.
So they had the electricity and whatever process to heat the... To refine everything. So once again, you're back to fossil fuels. So let's go back to the hemp, man. Let's all be hippies and have hemp shirts. And, you know, hey, there's 50,000 products that can be made out of hemp.
You have to educate the people. It's legal. Why is it illegal? Money.
Yeah.
Big money. That's why it's illegal. Otherwise, it would not be illegal even today.
So,
Freon, what is it? I can't remember the R number, R something other, but it's illegal. It's illegal. Why? Because DuPont's patent on that expired. So they paid off lobbyists in Congress to get it illegalized so they could put another thing on, like the, what, AIM-134 or whatever the heck it is.
Yep.
I mean, look, it's money.
And it's probably the same doggone stuff.
Yeah.
Just with a different name.
One of those honey things. And then you get a whole new patent. And then they make the other one illegal. So nobody can make it.
Do you know why they had them pump hairspray bottles come out?
Yeah.
They had to pump hairspray bottles come out because back in the day they were hollering about how your hairspray, the propellants in your hairspray, the same time that they were doing the Freon deal. The pump deal came out because the hairspray was causing a hole in the ozone layer, man. And so you had to have no propellant in your hairspray. Well, they're back to using it again, but either way, that's why the pump bottle came out. So now, hey, guess what? The plastic industry, they made out like a bandit because everybody's trying to buy the plastic pump one instead of buying the can one.
Right. Now, here's the thing. Oh, look, think about this. one of the biggest arguments of Freon was Freon destroys ozone. Duh! Where is the ozone? Does anybody know how high up in the atmosphere it is?
Yeah, does anybody know what actually creates ozone?
No, wait a minute. Next question. Does anybody know how heavy Freon is?
Yeah, there's the question. How to get up there? Here's another thing. All right, look, two things.
Air.
If you're worried about a hole in the ozone layer, one good thing would be not to be shooting rockets through the ozone layer. All right. Second thing is, when a lightning bolt goes across the air, it has thousands and thousands of volts of electricity and superheats the hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen in the air and scorches it, creating ozone, and so the ozone is being generated 24/7 around the globe.
Yes. Yes. There's approximately 5 to 6 bolts of lightning lightning strikes every second of every day throughout the entire world.
Yeah, but doggone it, Raymond. Look here, buddy. You can't talk about basic science around here, man. Look, the government's going to listen in. You teach somebody how to make a battery out of a lemon and a penny and a nickel, man, you're going to get the electrical industry out after you. I'm telling you, they don't play.
I can hear those drones coming now. They've got you targeted, buddy.
Yeah, they got one with your name on it, man. Raymond, they're coming to your house.
One of those galvanic batteries like you were talking about.
Yep.
And when I was down. But I was only creating like 4 volts and maybe 300 milliamps.
Yeah, but still.
That's for them to kill me over or come, kidnap me or anything. But the next one they just might, because I'm going to set up some 5-gallon buckets. I'm going to make 14 volts. And I'm going to produce anywhere from 1.5 to 2 amps.
Well, if you use the technology that this other dude was talking about, how to actually produce hydrogen with galvanic action, and you make your battery with like copper, any two dissimilar metals, all right? But the galvanic action between the two similar metals actually produces electrolysis in your water down there. And so you'll notice that as soon as you put those plates in there, you'll start getting bubbles coming up out of there.
Yep.
And so with that said, if you make that same system, throw a little bit of, maybe salt in there or something like that to make it a little bit more conductive, you might be surprised how much more energy you'll get out of that same doggone battery.
But here's the thing. The thing is, the average person would think, oh, I've got to go out and buy some outside stuff. No, you got to look around and see. Maybe you can keep going without them.
All right.
Find something else. But me, personally, I own a drywall company that does commercial work. We use galvanized metal studs every single day. Every day.
Yep.
Cut pieces off because it's too long. Okay, so I've got, I throw away, or I don't actually throw it away, I take it to the top. It's like, the trap. Anyway, we recycle it. My point is, I get rid of trash, galvanized metal, at minimum of 2 tons a month. How much electricity can I make with that?
Has anybody ever seen a label on a regular lead acid battery that had a warning on it?
Oh, yeah.
What's that warning say?
Something about no sparks or cigarettes or anything over the battery because it's giving off hydrogen.
Aha!
I saw one blow up one time.
So, if your battery is going to produce hydrogen and you have to get rid of that hydrogen, which is basically just goes up in and it's so insignificant at certain points that, it's not going to let you get a direct spark near that battery. It's not going to ignite. But what if you guide that hydrogen that's being released from the battery down into something else and save it, store it, right?
Right.
It's like a piggy bank, man. Extra fuel.
A lot of people don't realize that you cannot ignite gasoline fumes with a cigarette. However, anybody that's ever smoked it knows that if they get a stem in there, it'll spark. And when that spark, that's what will ignite it. And that's exactly how, when I saw that battery blow, that's what happened. The guy had a cigarette in his mouth, opened the battery, put water in it, and all of a sudden, it was a split second. I mean, we thought about 1/100 of a second. You got to see it. The cigarette hit one of those stems, it sparked, ignited the hydrogen in the battery, and blew the battery up, blew the whole top off, and hit the guy in the face with a bunch of acid.
Man. So, let's say hypothetically, you had a battery bank that was 100 batteries in this battery bank, and you modified each and every one of these batteries to have a vent, and on that vent, the hose basically ran down into a cell. So as you're using the energy off of there, and the electrolysis is occurring, and the hydrogen's being released, eventually your battery's going to dry out. You got to be able to replenish that battery to keep it going. It wouldn't be nothing to literally make you a battery. There was a guy that did a video reconditioning the battery, and he used alum, which basically pickling salt. All right, and he actually took a battery. He used baking soda and water to clean off the battery, flush out all the crud off of it, and then he turned around and mixed up a mixture of pickling salt, and then ran it back down in there and put it on a charger and charged that battery up, and then took that battery out and started his truck with it.
Yep.
All right. So, let's say hypothetically you want to do something like this, and you want to keep that battery fresh, and you're letting the hydrogen out one side over here, and whenever the battery level gets low, it actually underneath the water level of the battery, it would let more pickling water, whatever you want to call it, down into the cells, and so that battery would never go dry. But the water that was in that is being producing hydrogen that's being stored over on the other side. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. And that would be super easy to do, too.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever seen chicken wire?
Chicken wire?
Chicken water. It's like a round container, and it's got a tray that it sits in. And it has a hole in the side, but then there's a plug device that when you pull the top off, it's open, but that plug keeps the water from running out of the bottom of the hole. You fill it up with water, you put the top back on it, the top removes the plug, so the water goes boop, 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 and it comes out until it fills the tray up to above that hole.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's exactly how you would do the battery that you're talking about.
Yeah, it would basically have its own float system, shut the valve on and off, and fill it up and keep it topped off at all times.
Exactly. You know, you just take a 5-gallon bucket, fill it up with water, drill a hole down, have a hose to it, put it over to your battery, and stick it down to where the level that you want the water to be. When the water gets below that level, it goes boop, 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 fills it back up to that level. Stops.
So, essentially, all the stuff that we've listed right here isn't beyond the realms of possibility. It's already proven science.
Hey, what I'm talking about is over 100 years old.
Yeah.
It's technology that's 100 years old and nobody's using it.
Well, I talked about this a while back. I said whenever they take uranium and they highly refine it, you know, centrifuges or however they do the process, and they build these ceramic rods that are highly radioactive, and then they put those ceramic rods down in the water, but while this radioactivity is heating up the water and producing steam that turns turbines that runs the electricity, everything's fine as long as that 1800s technology doesn't fail with that modern-day nuclear rod inside there. It was really funny because I saw a video one day, and the people were talking about how there was this tragedy going on, this danger. Oh, man, there's these control rods fell down into the reactor, and they're all like panic mode. They're like, well, wait a second, that's not good. Control rods falling down into the reactor, and they're all like freaking out, and I'm like, well, hold on a second, people. Don't you even have any kind of clue what the control rods are even for? Essentially, the control rods that they have inside there, they're hung up by, there's multiples of these, and they're hung up by an electromagnet. And the system's set up so that if some reason they have a power loss, it will automatically drop those control rods down into the reactor to slow the reaction down to where you're basically just warming the water as opposed to boiling the water. And you can actually raise and lower the temperature by putting these control rods certain distances in the deal. So all this happened, the only thing that happened when those control rods fell down into that reactor was that it basically made it less efficient. You just turn the heat down a little bit. That's all.
Yeah, exactly.
But if people don't know the science and they're panicking over it, it's like hydrogen, you know, you think about the Hindenburg. They should have used helium. They wouldn't have blew up. But, you know, when people think about hydrogen, they think Hindenburg, and they think that hydrogen's so dangerous that, you know, you can't safely use this. Well, Stan Myers did. He was making hydrogen on demand. Other people have done it. See, it's been done. It's proven technology. And as far as this, the cells where they actually store the hydrogen when they make it, they have these things all set up like a gas tank. Have you ever seen inside of a racing gas tank? The way that they make those? They make them, one, for the doggone fuel don't slosh around. You see? And they make them with individual pockets in there to hold smaller quantities of fuel. You understand why that is why that's like that?
So it doesn't slosh around.
Yeah, well, when it sloshes around, it creates vapor. When you get too much vapor and that dang thing pressurizes, all you need is something to go wrong, and now you got one heck of a fire.
Let's go to another scenario.
And on impact.
My brother and I used to drive a milk tanker years ago, and milk tankers, you don't have baffles in them because it makes it difficult to clean them. And consequently, the milk sloshes back and forth. So when you take off, the milk runs to the back of the truck.
Yep.
And as you keep going, all of a sudden it changes, goes to the front of the truck. So when you take off from a red light, it turns green, you take off, next thing you know, you're going 5 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you're doing 15. And before you know it, you're back down to 7. And you blink your eyes, and you're up to 25.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you're back down to 15. And then all of a sudden you're up to 35. And this book just keeps sloshing back and forth. So when you have a gasoline or a fuel tanker, they don't have to be cleaned out for bacteria and crap. They're not food grade. So you put baffles in it so it can't slosh back and forth.
Yep.
Yeah, like you said, it separates the pockets of the fumes to where if any one ignites, it doesn't ignite them all.
And since hydrogen can get through really small filters, because of the size of the hydrogen molecule, can get through really small filters, you can still safely store that in something that is basically the equivalent of a sponge.
You know, that's how you separate your hydrogen and your oxygen. When you have a Joe cell, you put a filter on an angle that the hydrogen can go through, but the oxygen molecules are so large, they cannot go through. So they'll ride upward on that angle. So you actually separate your hydrogen and oxygen that way.
Well, now, there you go, man.
The hydrogen and oxygen together, if you don't separate it, then it is dangerous. However, the hydrogen by itself is not dangerous. It will not explode.
Yep.
It will not burn without oxygen.
That's why you don't want all that sloshing around in your fuel cell, because there you go, man.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's all there. It's all wrapped out there on the table, the pieces of the puzzle together. Go in your local communities, build yourself a dream team, find the best electrician you know, the best carpenter, the best at every trade out there, and you put together a team. You go out here, you scour YouTube and Shaziz Radio and all the other places out there talking about alternative energy. You try it before you deny it, and you actually build something, all right? When you build something and you know for a fact that it works, share it with everybody and his brother. when your neighbor asks you why you never go to the fuel station anymore, and you show them, hey, I got my fuel right here. Well, that looks like a bottle of water to me. And then you take a drink out of it. Yeah, I've poured the rest of this down in my gas tank and go to the market. That's how you're going to get it done, people. If you're going to wait around for industry, it will get done. I guarantee you, it will get done, because Pandora's box is open. The pressure's on. But you're going to wait many, many, many years before you see what we're talking about being mainstream. If you want to speed that process up, if you want to save the planet like tomorrow, then get on it. You know, put down your wooden stick and your paper sign and stop hollering about save the trees and get out there and plant a tree, for Pete's sake. How hard could it be, man? Give me a headache.
No joke.
Thomas, he does a whole lot. You ask me about chemistry, he's got a lot of knowledge. And there's a lot of chemicals that will interact with each other. There's actually videos out there where they show you how to use different materials to literally produce hydrogen. All right. Now, some of the byproducts from some of the processes they use are pretty toxic, and you wouldn't want to do them in a closed-in deal. But either way, those are pieces of the puzzle out there. What can you do with the byproduct that is created by there? If it's toxic, is it burnable? Is it something that produces heat or whatever? You know, your internal combustion engine in your car is, to me, it's hardcore proof of over-unity. You take the radiator out of that car and you run that car just like you normally do it, that engine produces enough energy that it will literally destroy itself within minutes. Alright? Yep. And so, you gotta get rid of that heat. But even after you got your radiator on there and the fan blowing on there and you're running your heater in your car, you go out there and put your finger down on the exhaust, you're gonna have a blister the size of Texas on your finger, man. Because it's a lot of heat. So cook your doggone biscuits while you're driving to the bank or something.
I'm still wondering why no one's taken the idea of basically using electrolysis to crack oxygen and hydrogen off of water and then sending the hydrogen over a carbon substance like charcoal that's been made from plain wood and smothering it out so that basically it can't completely combust. To make butane and propane, because I mean, how much energy is in that then that you can then burn with that oxygen that you just basically set aside?
Yeah.
You know what you just said, Thomas, you reminded me of an article I read years and years ago, back during the last part of the Second World War in Europe. The Germans were running low on fuel. They came up with a process by which they could actually dig a tunnel through a vein of coal, seal off the two ends, light the coal on fire, and put superheated steam inside. Now the tunnel that they would dig would be on an angle. Now as the coal would burn, the superheated steam would go through the tunnel, and it would cause a black ooze of liquid, real thick, to run out and run to the low part of the tunnel. They would pump that out and process it exact same process as crude oil and make gasoline and diesel fuel out of it.
Well, check this out. When you're burning firewood, I burn hedge when I burn firewood because hedge is a wood that has oil in it. And so it burns really good and burns really hot. And you don't have to burn as much in order to stay warm. So I like to burn hedge. But one of the byproducts of hedge, burning hedge, is you get creosote and black crud that builds up in your pipe that you got to get out there and clean up every so often. Because guess what? That stuff is highly flammable.
Yes, right? It is.
And you get that black char that you pull up out of there, that stuff will burn. I take that stuff that pull out of the chimney and I throw it back in there to help to get the fire started the next go around.
It's intensive, but it takes a lot of heat to get it burned. A lot of heat.
Yeah, well, see, I take a pile of that stuff and a propane torch, and I ignite that stuff, and once it's burning, it gets the bigger logs going, and so on and so forth.
That's exactly how to do it.
So I'm burning my trash, man. I'm burning my waste product.
There you go, Bill.
I'm repurposing the waste.
So, I like Thomas's idea about taking wood and turning it into charcoal.
Yep.
Put it in a sealed container. You put a carbon dioxide, and you get one of these foam meters, like you use for argon in tank welding.
Yep.
And you put about 2 or 3 cubic feet per minute. And so therefore there's no oxygen in the container. And then you just heat the container and all of the gases come off. Those gases that come off are combustible. You can burn that. But then when there's no more gas coming off, you stop it, you open the container, and you have pure charcoal.
Well, one of the things that everybody complains about whenever they do hydrogen cell is that they draw so many amps because you do it through the electrolysis process that the hydrogen cell actually gets really hot. All right? So why can't you use that doggone waste heat off of that doggone thing, man?
Yeah. Now there's devices on the outside of it.
Yeah, so there you go, man. And I noticed a process that I have this theory about heat, like with the tungsten element, that the cooler something is, that the more efficient it's actually going to be. Now, it sounds crazy to cool down a tungsten element, but once that thing gets hot, it seems to become less efficient. It seems to, as if Lenz's law, it gets stronger the hotter something gets, to the point where, like your electric motor, you're actually producing eddy currents and the Lenz effect inside electric motor. And so when you got any kind of load on that thing will get hot enough that it'll destroy the coating on the copper wire and actually ruin the motor.
Right.
So what if you're taking the doggone heat off of that electric motor, which they do in some motors, like the little RC motors have a built-in fan inside there and cooling vanes, which will suck cold air in there and keep that doggone thing cooled down.
Right.
So if you got a way to keep that electric motor cool, it's going to be more efficient. The hotter it gets, the less efficient it's going to become. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
The same thing about your automobile. When you're driving your doggone gasoline engine, it's producing a lot of heat. The hotter it gets, the oil starts to break down, the bearings start to break down, the grease in the bearing starts to ooze out, and the next thing you know, you got mechanical failure. But if you got a way, means by which to take that heat away, and instead of just letting it go out and disperse into the atmosphere, you're using that energy potential, then all the losses that they keep complaining about start disappearing, because it's not a loss. There's no waste energy if you're using it. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So with every process out there, there's some sort of loss that they claim is why you can't get over unity or 0 point or whatever. There's always some sort of loss. But if you got a swimming pool outside and you kind of like your swimming pool to be a certain temperature, but it takes too long to basically heat your swimming pool up, run you some lines through the back of your solar panels and let the sun do the work for you.
Yeah, make electricity and hot water at the same time.
Yeah, and you'll make your doggone solar panel more efficient, because the cooler it is, the more efficient and the longer it's going to last.
I have proven that by taking and putting a fan and one of those little yard visters. Put a yard mister underneath my solar panel and a fan to blow that mist up on it to cool the backside, get 20-25% more electricity out of it.
Yep.
You cool the backside of the solar panel and it will produce more electricity. You can increase the efficiency drastically.
Well, I'd like to say, man, look, it's there. It's already been there. Every single question has already been answered. All these pieces of the puzzle are laying there on the table.
I got an idea. What about taking a solar panel and cooling a bunch of computer devices to the backside and then put heat sinks on them?
Well, why not?
Yeah, why not? Come on, man.
So now you got a solar panel that'll work. Even when it's not really sunny outside, because there is going to be a temperature difference.
Right.
There you go. It'll absorb heat during the daytime from the sun using it, and that heat will transfer to the Peltier element, and then there's a cool wind blowing behind it. There you go, man. Even if it's only trickle charging, it's still doing something.
Yeah.
And embed you some piezoelectric crystals in the doggone face of the glass there, and there you go. Now you're, when it rains outside, beating down on the Peltier elements, it's actually producing even more juice.
I like that. In a place like Florida, where, I mean, you know, you have 2 to 3 thunderstorms every 24 hours?
Yep.
I mean, I think it would take, you just make it up to where it looks like a solar panel, but it's really Peltier devices.
Yep.
And it rains, it just hits on and makes it electricity. Come on, man. Why not? Why not? I love it.
Yeah. Well, I could just go on and on and on and on and on forever, but it's out there. I have people who mouth off at me all the time and tell me how stupid I am, but I don't ever see any videos of them putting something together and it doesn't work. You know, I haven't seen nobody come up there and say you can't do this or you can't do that without actually getting on there, doing a video, doing some research, actually physically making something, and then telling me how stupid I am.
Right, exactly.
So, my ideal is put your money where your mouth is, take your time and build something, show me why it will not work, and we can move on.
Don't show me numbers.
Yeah.
Don't show me numbers that are 150 years old. That's cool. Technology has changed in the past 150 years.
Well, what do you say we take a quick coffee break, and
that's a good idea.
And I'm gonna put a cup of brown Joe on, and we'll take a quick music break, and then be back and finish off the last half hour of the show. What do you think?
Sounds good thing.
All right, everybody, stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science. Peace and love.
I would. Oh, gorgeous. Oh, that is gorgeous. Yeah, I need a cup of the brown stuff, the shade of an acorn, made warm by the same source that I take my cakes from. Using a teapot, a mug or fine china, been hooked up to ivy, need constant supplies. And a trip for my urges might verge on perverted, perverted brown tea. I'm certain it's worth it. With Sherpas who work hers and use a fresh fountain, I've discerned blues from Peruvian mountains. I've slurped up a cup from an elephant's trunk with a couple of monks who are utterly stunk. I've had bourbons with sultans and creams with queens, and I've bathed in Earl Grey. I'm really that keen, and missionaries dismiss me for my single epiphany. The dip between him and me is a simple sip of British tea. So when times are hard and life is rough, you can stick the kettle on and find me a cup. Now when I say Earl Grey, you say yes please. Earl Grey,
yes please.
Earl Grey,
yes please.
When I say Assam, you say lovely. Assam,
lovely.
Assam,
lovely.
When I say ooh, you say ah. Ooh, ah. Ooh, ah. Ooh, ah. Ooh, oh, we're gone.
Gone on wrong.
Yeah. I've been around the world in 80 brews to see the place it takes me to make a brew that tastes like the cream cakes made by angels do. I'm not the same as you, get shaky but aim to swig amazing fluids but don't make it the same. Now using fine leaves picked by pretty maidens in a bag knitted by a seamstress who lives in Copenhagen, brewed up in a pot made of semi-precious metal, let the blessed content settle in my very special kettle. Now when I say ooh, you say long. Ooh,
long.
Ooh,
long.
When I say herbal, you say no thanks. Herbal,
no thanks.
Herbal,
no thanks.
No. No, I want milk in it. Strong though. I want to see that spoon stand up.
If you're tired of tea, then you're tired of blood.
I'm madder than a hatter and it fires my mic. Liken me to Earl Grey, a Sam or Ginger, Lapsang, Souchon, raise my pinky finger. Keep your sodding coffee in a proper cup of coffee. Bottoms pop me lobbing, teapot to your poncy rotten coffee shop. Coffee clocks nodding off, lost the plot, sodding off. Need some caffeine panning and a Battenberg to top it off. Cut them off a different cloth, a different lot can take their beer. On 80 cups a day, I haven't slept for 80 years. You could say I'm mad for tea or just say I'm mad. Oh, you can't stay any longer. Oh, actually, I'm quite glad. All the more Battenberg for me. I can barely pour, my hands have got a bit shaky from caffeine. Oh, love it though. I'd sell my own grandma for a cup. Well, I'd sell you your grandma.
Slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. Time keeps on slipping, into the future. I wanna fly like an eagle now to the sea. I fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me. I want to fly like an eagle now till I'm free. No shoes on their feet. How's the people living in the street? Oh, there's a solution. I want to fly like an eagle to the sea. Fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me. I want to fly like an eagle till I'm free.
Thank you. space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
All right, everybody, we're back. Some interesting conversations with brilliance and genius going on behind the scenes on the coffee break and all that. I got my coffee. Did y'all get your coffee?
Yes, sir.
Yay. Alright, so we put all kinds of stuff on the table, all kinds of ideas out there, man. There's so many people out there working on so many different projects, and they can't seem to figure out why they can't get this thing done. I mean, it's not like the technology's there. It's there. Everybody knows the basic science, the simple science of everything. And so with that said, I keep talking about everybody keeps wanting to put all their eggs in one basket, you know. Why don't you take all them eggs and combine them to make the whole puzzle? You know, all these different anomalies, everything we know about waste heat from electric motors. You know if that electric motor's cooled down, it's going to run better if it ain't so hot. You see what I mean? And take all these things in conjunction with each other. Who's to say your hydrogen cell has to be powered by a battery? Why don't you just power it directly from a wind turbine and a bridge rectifier? All right, you're going to get the same process going. The battery is just going to help speed it up. So you got your windmill. It's turning. It's producing AC current, which is running through a bridge rectifier, which is charging up a battery, which is running your hydrogen cell. And so while it's windy outside, it's storing up hydrogen for later use. You see what I mean? And then you got the sun doing the same exact thing. So you got a system over there that is totally self-contained. The only purpose for this entire system is to produce hydrogen. Then you get the mechanics and the crew to literally modify an existing engine that will run on hydrogen. And so all you have to do is let the sun and the wind and whatever's going on outside produce electricity that is charging up a cell that is producing hydrogen that is being stored into a safe container, pressurized container, and then you run your doggone generator off of that. See what I mean?
Yep.
So instead of putting all your eggs in one basket and trying to say, well, there's people out there, whatever technology you name, whether it be the Bedini motor, the Stirling engine, or, Peltier devices, or any of these that we've talked about, that's the way to go. This is the way to go. Tesla's the way to go. You know, all of these technologies is the way to go. But nobody ever says, well, what if we take some of Tesla's technology and mix it with some of Bedini's technology and mix it with some of the Stirling engine technology and some of the steam engine technology? What if we take all these things in conjunction with one another? Why couldn't we build a doggone device over Unity or free energy or alternative, at the very least, a super efficient generating system? You see what I mean?
Yep.
I mean, it's like Thomas said here a minute ago before we came back off a break. He was saying there's technologies that's been out there for a long time and you can't understand why ain't nobody ever jumped on it. You know? And that's why we're where we're at. That's you know, right now we're getting pretty used to not paying very much for gas, but I think that's only temporary until, you know, they figure out how to get it jacked back up there again. But either way, we're heading in the right direction when fuel prices are going down, and you know, that's going to keep the internal combustion engine going longer, because hey, if the gas is only $1.99 a gallon, who needs alternative energy? Gas is cheap. You see what I mean?
I love the way you think. I feel that the way you think.
Yep. You know, if it's a whole about saving the planet, if global warming's going to cause the polar bears to drown and the ice caps are melting and moving over to my house, then somebody got to figure out a way to heat Oshaziz's house to keep him warm. Because I'm skinny, man. I get cold easy. My radiator ain't functioning properly.
You are a fan, though. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Somebody once told me if I turn sideways and stick my tongue out, I'd look like a zipper.
Only if we're naked. Which I don't even want to think about that.
No, I was sticking my tongue out, Raymond. We wouldn't talk about anything else. Anyway, I also, it was called like Mr. Salty the Pretzel Man. You ever seen Mr. Salty?
I tell you what, you're one of the three people I know that can stand under a clothesline during a hailstorm and not get wet.
Yeah, that's why whenever it's raining outside, I just run around and dodge the raindrops. Unless they're blowing sideways, and, you know. Anyway.
The problem with being skinny is you might be able to dodge them, but all it takes is one to get you completely soaked.
Yeah. And that's true. Enough of cracking on me. All right, so I brought the whole hydrogen deal up today because I wanted to point out that electrolysis isn't the only way to use hydrogen. You can actually get electricity from hydrogen recombining with the water molecule. So with that said, they got hydrogen cells out there, hydrogen generators. The technology's already been used. There's already cars that are literally driving on hydrogen, trucks that are driving on hydrogen. There are...
Wait. What do you mean you're talking about it like there's some out there that drive on hydrogen and other ones drive on something else. The only ones not driving on hydrogen are electric cars. If you're putting gasoline in your car, it's actually the hydrogen you're burning.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
They're all driving on hydrogen, just like the nuclear reactor and the coal-ran electric generator. They're all basically using steam, so we've never left the steam age when it comes to that.
But we were talking about in the pure form, and the hydrogen cells that they use to make electricity that are running electric cars is the other version.
Right, so what you're looking at basically between running hydrogen, pure hydrogen, and running gasoline through your engine is that the other contaminants that are in there in the gasoline are slowing the burn down.
Yeah.
So you just need to basically prepare for a faster burn, that's all, yeah. If you're going to run pure hydrogen. But if you can step that timing so that basically those pistons aren't being pushed on when they're trying to compress, then, you know, you're golden.
Yeah, that was what Steven was pointing out in there about getting an engine that could be manually, you can manually adjust the timing. And a lot of the older big block Chevy, Ford, whatever, they got a timing chain in there. And in the old days, that was a bad thing to have it off timing. But in modern days, all you got to do is move that gear over a degree or so, and now you got the timing off where you need it.
Wow. Unless you're running a newer car that has a computer on it, then at that point you need to basically start digging into the hacker community and see if you can't get somebody to get you an Arduino program to basically control all that.
Yeah, the best ones
that way you can get it and monkey around with it as you please, you know.
There's a racing show out there, Street Outlaws or Street Racers or whatever. I can't remember what the actual show is, but these guys, they know how to take those computers and tune them to get the best performance out of these doggone cars, man. You should see some of these cars that these folks run out there. They're out there doing illegal street racing, and they actually got a video or a series on satellite TV.
Don't call it illegal. Just call it racing without asking permission.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, you know, those guys out there that know how to take the modern engine and get the best, highest performance out of that modern engine, you'd be surprised what you could do with a factory car, no modifications to it other than just getting in there and redoing the doggone software in the brain. You could tune that car up to have more horsepower. It's incredible what they do with these things.
Everybody's all into NASCAR. I mean, how fast can you go? How much fuel are you burning? What I'd like to see is somebody come up with some kind of an organization, a club, where you have races to see who could get the best gas mileage.
Yep. Well, the land speed record the land speed record for an electric car was 245 miles an hour using nickel cadmium battery packs, and they were not putting any juice back into that cell. So, with that said, imagine you had a hydrogen generator on there that was putting juice back in there. That you'd go from that 245 miles an hour probably up to in excess of 300 miles an hour. I mean, who wants to drive 300 miles an hour on the freeway? Because it would be kind of fun, I guess, for a few minutes.
Is that the thing you're talking about where they're basically the equivalent of like 2,000 D cells that they drain in like 45 seconds?
Yeah, and they were doing 245 miles an hour. They were hauling, boy.
So put some piezo elements on that thing because it'd be vibrating like crazy.
I want somebody to do a test. I want somebody out there who has access to a radar gun or some sort of equipment or even the math skills and a stopwatch to do a test. Do you remember the old slot cars that people used to drive around the little track? You got the little gun and you just pull the trigger and the slot cars would fly around there. I want somebody to do the math and figure out how many miles per hour those little slot cars are moving.
Hey, they make those things. I mean, they're very cheap. They're very inexpensive. They use them on baseball fields to measure how fast the guy's throwing the ball.
Well, I want to know how fast that slot car is going, because if you watch them things, they'll be looping around that track so fast they're a blur.
I think somebody did that years ago. They measured it, and they scaled it up on the scale model. If you scale the vehicle up to the size of a full-size vehicle, it was running 250 miles an hour.
Yeah, and that's just electric car, man.
Now, it wasn't actually running 250 miles an hour, but that if you scaled it up, it would be.
Yeah. I want to see somebody do the math on that, because those slot cars, when I was a kid, if you went around that corner too fast, and it was real easy because you barely push on the trigger and it'd fly around there, hit that curve, and centrifugal force would kick in, that car would fly across the room. Those things got some torque, they're moving really fast, and if you had a scaled up version of that with a hydrogen cell technology that was producing enough electricity to push that motor, bam, you got your car right there, brother.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, it's based off of old school technology, man. How far back do you know the slot car is actually going?
They were going pretty good when I was in junior high school.
So what years do you think that would have been?
Let's see, I'm 72 now, and that was back when I was about 12 years old, so about 60 years ago.
60 years ago, they had some electric cars that ran on little tracks that would haul butt. Look, it's
60 years ago.
We got it. We got the technology, and the only way it's only going to get done is whenever you go out there and you find that car that the internal combustion engine just blew up in, instead of spending the money to go out and buy a new motor and putting it in there, go out there and buy your electrical conversion kit and work it until you get that thing as efficient as possible, right? And so if you're not paying for fuel, you probably get the doggone electric motor out of the trash, man. There's tons of motors out there that probably have enough torque to turn that doggone transmission, you know?
Yeah.
Or just make it a doggone direct drive. Have somebody press out the shaft into one of those motors and make it just like the slot car. So you'll have a positive track rear end in your car, And on the front, you put some CV joints, so you'll have two electric motors running in that doggone thing. And you can build your generators on the same shaft so that you're actually putting juice back into the system while you're running it.
The thing is, Shazam, you just eliminated. By doing that, you eliminated 50% of the friction, which it eats up 70% of your gasoline.
Yeah. I mean,
when you put the motor direct with the wheel directly on the motor, you've done away with the drive shaft, you've done away with the rear end, you've done away with the transmission. I mean, you've done away with over 50%.
Yeah, and took away a whole lot of weight, man. Your average car weighs what, like 3/4 ton?
A ton and a half.
About a ton and a half. Okay. Well, either way, that's pretty doggone heavy. Now, if you could take a lot of weight off of that car, you'd be surprised how fast that car'd go.
Exactly. Weight does eat up gas mileage.
Yeah, and lay off the cookies, and you know, eat some healthy vegetables, and your body weight alone would save you some gas mileage.
Yep. Hey, Thomas. What about piezo crystals on your suspension system?
There you go.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you hit a rough road, and you're smiling the whole time because your car is bouncing up and down, and you're smiling, making all this electricity. I mean, come on, man. I mean, the possibilities are beyond the imagination of the human being.
Just magnets in magnets and coils of wire in your shock absorbers. You imagine if you could picture how much your shock absorbers are moving when you're driving down the road. If you could only see how fast those things are moving,
yeah.
You know, and that's why eventually they'll fail. But one of the things about it is, if you build it right, you could actually use the eddy currents that are created, Lenz's law, to actually be portion of the shock instead of having to have so much gas in there. It's the magnetic field that's slowing you down, plus it's producing heat that you could then turn and put some electricity back in your car.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same thing when you started saying it. Oh, that is fantastic. That's cool. It would actually assist your shock absorber system and make electricity at the same time.
Yep.
But, I mean, that is wild. And the heat, again, your piezo, not piezo, but your Peltier device. You extract the heat through a Peltier device. So you're making more electricity right there. Come on. I mean, people out there think, I mean, the technology is not here. It's been here for years. It's just nobody's using it properly.
Well, there. Like I said,
expensive, too expensive. Come on, Shazam. I mean, how many people have told you, "Oh, that's just too expensive. You can't build it because it just costs too much." How much? Huh? $100? $1,000? $1,000? Peltier devices.
If they ain't willing to put the effort, okay, we can spend millions of dollars to go to war, billions of dollars to go to war. We can spend money to go into space and take pictures of all that kind of stuff, and if the planet's dying, you'd think you'd want to fix home before you go out there into the universe and trash something else. So my thing is that you would take the extra time and the extra research to actually solve the issue that you're claiming is actually a real problem, when in fact it's not. If it was a real problem, it don't take 20 years to boil water, man. It don't. Try it. Go put your big old pan of water on the stove and just turn the heat down as low as you possibly can where it's just barely heating on there, and see if it takes you 20 years to boil that water into steam. Now, if the planet was heating up like they were talking about, man, we'd all be smoking right now. Literally.
The thing is, you don't even have to put a pan of water on the stove. All you have to do is pour it in your blender. Put some insulation around the cup holding the water and turn your blender on high.
Yep. Then you get a doggone, what they call that, cavitation. Would heat the water.
And it will heat it up.
Yeah, just spinning the water around will heat it up.
2 winters ago, I took water, and the water was 42 degrees. I put it in my blender, put 1 pound. I weighed it out, put 1 pound of water. Okay, so 1 degree Fahrenheit, 1 pound of water, 1 BTU. Right? In 20 minutes, I heated the water up to 92 degrees. 50 degree increase.
So why don't people take and learn from that cavitation device? Like they've made a man-made water hammer, and instead of having a resistive load such as an element in a hot water tank, why don't you have an electric motor on the top of that hot water tank with a spindle inside there that will spin that water up until it gets all the way up to 100 and whatever degrees you want it, and then that motor shuts off.
Yeah.
Now, isn't the whole purpose of all that is to reduce your carbon footprint and save electricity? Come on, man. It's all there. Every bit of it. I challenge anyone out there to debunk any of the science that we've told you about today. I challenge you. Do a video. Prove us wrong.
They can't debunk it. It's impossible. The only way they could possibly debunk it is to lie.
The question that Raymond asked earlier, he said, if energy can neither be created nor destroyed, where does it go?
Exactly. You did it over and over again.
If you got a leaky bucket and you put another bucket underneath there and you capture that water, well, then you ain't lost that, right?
Right.
So why couldn't you do the same thing with every single device out there that has waste heat or some sort of whatever, you know, friction heat, anything? Why can't you use that? Why can't you use the water dripping out of your doggone air conditioner to recycle to cool down the back of the air conditioner like Raymond talked about earlier?
Exactly. Here's another thing, too. What about using the heat off the backside of your air conditioner?
Yeah.
And use my device, which is a cold steam turbine, which you can boil water at 60 degrees. The heat coming off the air conditioner, the backside of your air conditioner, is over 120 degrees. You can take that heat, boil water, and cause it, in the agitation of the water, to jiggle magnets over coils, make electricity, and run it back through the air conditioner, and actually cause your air conditioner to run on one-third of the normal amount of electricity.
Not to mention that heat off at the top of it with some Stirling engine technology could actually turn a little Stirling engine generator.
As well. Exactly. I mean, come on. Same heat over and over. All you're doing is taking the heat out of the house and throwing it outside. Well, take that heat and run it through a cold steam turbine, and then when it goes through that, if you run your Stirling engine off of what's coming out. I mean, it's the same heat. It's not doing anything. You're either going to throw it out in the open, let it spread out, or you're going to use it over and over and over again.
All right, guys. Well, we're down to the wire. Stephen Gibbons put a link to my Electron video, and he asked what sort of mileage and speed per charge did you get out of the best advantage. I never really measured a lot of stuff. The bike was made with the intentions that it was made from junk, and so it wasn't very efficient. But that same concept, if done right, if it had the rest of the charging systems on the wheels and hub motors, there's some electric motorcycles out there. Google up Zero and look at the Zero electric motorcycle. It's not only beautiful, it was quick, but it's 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt possible to build a self-charging electrical motorcycle or car, for that matter. That one there had 120 volt at 500 watt chargers. They're called red line generators. They're pretty expensive, but they use them on the back of a doggone telephone trucks to light up the power lines and stuff while they're working on them, and electrical trucks. And it also had a 36 volt floor buffer motor that was being run off of three lawn and garden batteries that ran through the actual charging system that basically charged the batteries back up. Plus, it also had a generator off of an old Volkswagen that was putting juice back into it as well. And so if I would have taken that thing further than what I did, then I could have built what I needed to build a super efficient motorcycle that would charge itself. And that one there, like I said, it was made out of junk. You could actually hear the thing clacking, the wheels, the bearings in the wheels were shot, the tires were dry rotted, but I took and made that thing out of junk. Recycled junk, 100% recycled junk, and made it work. So that was the best I could do with the finances and the equipment that I had to work with. But you put us in a good machine shop, and you get some guys and gals out there that know a lot about motorcycles and bearings and electrical and stuff like that, I guarantee you we'll build a bike that'll make the Zero look like Stone Age technology.
There you go.
And it'll charge itself. So with that said, that's pretty much all we got time for today, guys and gals. Thomas, thank you for being on the show, and Raymond, thank you, and everybody who wants to join us for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time, and I don't know what that time is over at y'all's place, but that's it. Set your alarm clocks.
There you go.
So, been a great show today, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Guys got anything last you want to tell anybody? Any words of encouragement?
Yes. If you try an experiment and it fails, if you learn anything from it, then it didn't really fail. You had a learning experience. And number two, we've said it over and over again on this show. The technology we discussed today is nothing new. It's old technology that people just plain don't know about or don't care about. Start experimenting. Start playing with this stuff. I'm serious. It's not as expensive as you think it is.
Somebody got a phone call. Somebody got a phone call.
Me.
All right, what about you, Thomas?
It's all been said. So. Yeah,
pretty much. That's it. What more can we say? But we're going to keep saying it. We're going to keep working on it. And, Steven, yeah, that motorcycle was a lot of fun. I need to get it cleaned up and get it back out this summer and do some upgrades on it and do another video on it. So, with that said, you all been listening to the Mad Science Show. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.